Thanks for listening to WRIF Online. The live web stream will begin in 15 seconds.
The best way to shop for blinds, drapery, and carpet is in the comfort of your own home. House of Blinds, the leading in-home shopping service, gets factory direct pricing and professionals right to your door. Click and save today.
Better, I need to be here so we can be together, but life is so hard, seeing through these eyes. Love is no heart, believing these lies. Can you be strong before your time's up? Looking to find what you've made your mind up. There has to be a change so my seeds can reach anything they can grasp, anything to teach. I got 24 hours to live, I hope faith. All I have left in my heart is one take, one breath, one sigh, one death and one try. One more reason to ask God why. It's my life, it ain't what I say. So until my time is up on that day, I'll be who I wanna be, do what I gotta do, live how I wanna live, prove what I gotta prove. It's not so funny how we live each day. Wake up, go to work, come home and replay. Yeah. We say we love life, inside it's untrue. Unless you got dollars aside, it's not you. I used to wake up, call in, or just quit, cause I couldn't stand a boss in my face for dumb shit. You know what I mean, that boss with no life, no sex, no friends, no kids, and no wife. Career motivated on an hourly wage. Well, see, I'm on a whole other page. I gotta make money, man. I got kids. The father and uncles in time have done bids. Iced out homies only preserve thugs to get what's deserved or they deserve slugs. If murder was the case that they gave me, dear God, I wonder can you save me? I got 24 hours to live, my whole fate. All I have left in my heart is one take, one breath, one sigh, one death and one try. One more reason to ask God why. It's my life, it ain't what I say. So until my time is up on that day, I'll be who I wanna be, do what I gotta do, live how I wanna live, prove what I gotta prove. What if in one blink you could end all the pressure built up inside, no one bears to measure. No pain to hide inside with no stress, no tears to be cried outside and no less. Make it all wash away with one scream, one shot, one bullet, one love and one dream. Going to a place where mouths never speak, but thoughts convey words, peace and technique. Yeah. My time is coming, watch me when I shine. I strive for something, watch me when I rhyme. Thoughts race through my head like track stars, 100 miles an hour inside like fast cars. I can't slow down if I do, it's all gone. Everything I've done up till now in this song. Yeah. Ends right here, my life and no fear. My fight, my struggle to die with no care. I got 24 hours to live, my whole fate. All I have left in my heart is one take, one breath, one sigh, one death and one try. Yeah. One more reason to ask God why. It's my life, it ain't what I say. So until my time is up on that day, I'll be who I wanna be, do what I gotta do, live how I wanna live, prove what I gotta prove.
City,
Motor City, Motor City, Motor
City,
Motor. You're in. This is WRIN.
Do the wind.
award-winning night call, the Riff's Phone-In Talk Show on 101 WRIF Detroit. Our number, 313-298-WRIF. Now, here's the host of Night Call, Peter Werby.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you for your patience. We're about almost 7 minutes late getting on the air. Man, all that local music on Motor City Riffs. Our producer, Jay Hudson, also the co-host of that incredible program. I don't know how they limit it to 1 hour. I mean, there's so much great music in the Motor City, like there always has been. Well, good evening to you. Night Call is brought to you this hour by Waking Up. It's Metro Detroit's sweatshop free clothing store. It's located in the Universal Mall at 12 Mile Road in DeQuinder in Warren. And you can go to wakingupstore.com. And this coming Friday at the Waking Up store in the Universal Mall, Emma Henderson, the president emeritus of the Detroit City Council, is going to be out there for a book signing. Remember, too, Saturday, September 16th, the Universal Mall is going to be the site of the 2006 Waking Up Green Expo. I'm going to be speaking out there as well. More details as things develop. 313-298-WRIF is our phone number here. 313-298-9743. I promised some of you that I would eventually get the numerical deal for you. You know, it's complained over the years, and understandably so, are blind people. People are with limited vision. They go, I don't know, I can't work that. I can do the numbers. 313-298-WRIF, 313-298-9743. If you have email, short, please. You want me longer stuff? Hey, I want to tell you, some of you, this is kind of diminished as a problem, but some of you are sending me 3 and 4 and 5 forwards a day, much of it from the mainstream sites. I see those. What I depend on you guys for, pardon me, is stuff that I might not otherwise see. That's a little off the beaten path. It's a little obscure. But if you're sending me stuff from Yahoo or the New York Times or, Common Dreams or something like that, please believe that I have seen it. All right. The slaughter in the Middle East continues, mostly the Israeli armed forces destroying Lebanon. It's an absolutely hideous situation. The Lebanese parliamentary speaker, a prominent Shiite who has been negotiating on behalf of Hezbollah, has rejected the U.S.-French draft U.N. ceasefire resolution on Sunday. I don't even know how they could enforce it to begin with, any kind of peace resolution. And understandably so. I mean, to agree to the French-U.S. draft, I mean, for one thing, I mean, it is the height of arrogance and cynicism that the United States would have any part in the peacemaking process when it was key to the war-making process. Believe it, that George W. Bush signed off on the Israeli invasion of Lebanon. And as you know, every bit of destruction, every bit of the hundreds of civilians that have died, the whole disintegration under force of arms of the Lebanese civilian infrastructure is being done with the weapons that you and I pay for, because it is us and only us that is supplying Israel with its weapons. Anyway, you get our shorts in an uproar. Syria and Iran are supplying Hezbollah. Well, we're supplying Israel. The people that really want peace, that really want genuine peace, have as one of their demands that all parties stop supplying weapons to the belligerents in this. That Iran and Syria stop, and that that the United States stop arming Israel as well. The 7-point proposal of Lebanon calls for a mutual release of prisoners held by Israel and Hezbollah and the withdrawal of Israeli troops from southern Lebanon. If not, then the type of destructive behavior, the non-defensive behavior that Israel is taking part of, the collective punishment of the Lebanese, which hasn't even worked. Now the figures show 80% of Lebanese support Hezbollah, including Christians, including Druze, including all the people that previously were rivals of Hezbollah. The country has been united under this absolutely unwarranted invasion and certainly unwarranted destruction of civilian life in Lebanon by Israel. He said, oh, they started it. Well, doesn't that sound like a bunch of kids? He hit me first. Well, the hitting first goes back and back and back. And where do you want to start it? Where do you want to, who hit first? You know, for one thing, the soldiers that were captured by Hezbollah were captured in disputed territory that Lebanon, not Hezbollah, but Lebanon, the government of which Hezbollah is part of, says that that's part of Lebanese territory that Israelis illegally occupy. I mean, I'm not interested in arguing that at all. Also, Israel holds thousands and thousands of Palestinian Lebanese prisoners. And one of the things that Hezbollah wanted was the women and children that Israel holds captive. Isn't that what they say about those soldiers? Or prisoners. And so when you're going to talk about an equitable solution to this, it means Israel releasing all of its prisoners. But I got to tell you one thing, even with all of that, the old slogan about no justice, no peace. As long as Israel will not give up its territorial occupation, its territorial exploitation, and its idea that it can aggrandize its territory on the basis of other people's land, there's never going to be peace there. And the Palestinian people at the hands of the Israelis have lost tens of thousands of citizens. When Israel created Hezbollah by its invasion in 1982, there was no Hezbollah. But the party of God, Hezbollah, began when Israel invaded illegally Lebanon and again did that sort of same sort of destruction, except they were much worse. Maybe you could say things are getting better. At that time, Israel killed 20,000 Palestinian citizens that were living in Lebanon at the time. So, you know, this idea of poor beleaguered Israel, I don't buy it for a minute. I don't buy it for 1 minute whatsoever. But, you know, you see the news today. It's all about Israel hits hard but suffers 15 deaths. And that's been the lead story. Mostly people in the West are sort of unmoved by people of color, third world people, when they suffer these enormous losses, when their cities are destroyed, when they suffer rocket attacks and when they're shot and massacred and what have you. It's sort of like Greek tragedy. You know, within those Greek tragedies, it's only the high-born that can really suffer. And that kind of racial and cultural arrogance that we have in the West here says that when thousands of prisoners are being held by Israel, no one pays attention. Two are taken by Hezbollah, and it's ready for war. Yeah, it's sort of like if we were in a bar. I was there with a bunch of my friends, and I shoved you really aggressively and really hard, you know, really an assault almost, but, you know, like slammed you in the shoulder. You've seen guys do that. I wouldn't do that. And so your response is, kill me, kill all my friends, go into my neighborhood, destroy my neighborhood, kill 20% of the people in my neighborhood, and drive all the rest of them out. That's what it's comparable to. Now, we're talking about a defenseless country that is supplied by the most sophisticated weapons on earth because they're all U.S., paid for by you and I. Our schools close, our roads are bad, we don't have enough jobs, we don't have enough good jobs, but we're sending billions of dollars a year to arm Israel. That doesn't make a bit of sense to me. And one of the things is that Lebanon and this war is a laboratory for the Pentagon. They're watching, how does a conventional army, which is just like ours, fare against a well-armed, well-disciplined, I don't know if you'd call it, it's not even really a guerrilla group. It's a militia. It's heavily disciplined. It's connected to a political party, a whole social structure of community support for the people there. Now, and now I want to get to something, too, that really got on me. Representative John Dingell, who is the dean of the U.S. House of Representatives, means he's the guy that's been serving the longest, I think. Tell me if I'm wrong. 313-298-WRIF, 313-298-9743. Now, get this. This is in the Detroit Free Press from August 2nd, and it's co-written by Niraj Warrico. We're going to get to him in a while, too. This is a man whose writing fosters ill feelings within our community. But we'll get to that a little more. U.S. Representative John Dingell was doing damage control Tuesday after telling a local TV interviewer that he wouldn't take sides in the current Mideast conflict. His remarks in an interview with Channel 4 said, "I don't take sides for or against Hezbollah or for or against Israel." That whistled around internet blogs and led him into a day-long series of peacemaking missions with pro-Israel groups. Now, why can't a man, a public figure, why can't he speak his mind? John Dingell represents a good portion of Dearborn, and there's hundreds of thousands of people of Middle East origin in that. So, and he was one of the people, 400, I think, the vote giving essentially Israel carte blanche in to destroy Lebanon in the manner that it is, 410-8. And there were a few people with some guts that rather than saying, look, this is a long-standing problem, and the fact that two soldiers were captured is not a reason to start a major war, which could still blow up in all of our faces, which could be a conflagration engulfing the whole of the Middle East already. Because you know, these neocons, these people that forced the U.S. into this war in Iraq, Cheney and the rest of them, they still want to go after Syria and Iran. And damn, if Israel can't handle Hezbollah, thinking about countries with you know, formidable armies, I mean, what an incredible slaughter that would be. It'll be like World War One. So we want to do everything we can to solve it. And Dingell is absolutely right. The U.S. taking sides is an absolute error, an absolute 100% error. Supplying Israel with weapons is an absolute error. We hold the purse strings. And that what would cut the ground out completely from under the opponents of Israel is to create peace in the West Bank and in Gaza. That's at a minimum. But Israel has no intention of ever allowing a viable Palestinian state to arise. They have no intention. And they have every intention, as they've been continuing to do over the last 6 years under Bush, to gobble up more and more territory of the West Bank illegally. Illegally. So here's John Dingell having to do damage control because he represented his constituents. Here's Representative John Dingell, one of the most powerful men in the House, having to do damage control because he spoke his mind. Am I going to have to do damage control on Monday because I'm speaking my mind? You can imagine how to what lengths anyone would have to go to make me say anything different. You better believe that. Let me see here. And again, here, let me see a couple people commenting. Dave Twersky, Director of International Affairs for the American Jewish Congress, said he was disturbed but not surprised by Dingell's comments. Dingell thinks he can be above the fray here, but there are no equal partners. Hezbollah is a terrorist actor. The notion of being an honest broker to him always means backing away from Israel. So if you back away from Israel, you then have to do damage control. I don't get this at all, and I don't like it at all. Let's see. The Republican Jewish Committee Executive Director Matthew Brooks issued a statement Tuesday which he called Dingell's comments outrageous. He doesn't refute them, really. He just says they're outrageous. They shouldn't be spoken. We shouldn't have a political debate about this. We should unquestionably send billions and billions and billions so it starts getting up into the tens of billions of dollars, sending the weaponry that Israel is currently using to destroy the civilian life in Lebanon without question. You can't question it. Well, what kind of issue is this? This isn't democracy. This isn't a democracy when you have to do damage control when you speak your mind. I salute John Dingell. I absolutely salute him. And you know what John Dingell's doing? So John Dingell says, I don't support either side. You know, I don't support either side either. I certainly don't support Hezbollah. These religious fanatics who are based this. Well, you know what? I want to take that back. This is a movement This is a huge social movement that provides a lot for the Shiite community of southern Lebanon and in other parts of it as well. It's based around a fundamentalist religion that I have, that I think is ultimately destructive. But I certainly don't support them, and I don't support Israel one little bit. I don't know why any American would, to tell you the truth. Because what, I mean, it's not a matter of supporting one side or another. It's how can we stop all this, and how can, and what the United States has done is to facilitate all this rather than solving the root problems of it. What's John Dingell doing that's important? He didn't say the right thing. He had to do damage control. On the other hand, John Dingell is trying to save jobs in Livonia of his constituents. Remember last week I read this email from Mike in, let me see, where is his city? Doesn't say, I think he's from Taylor's. I don't have both pages of this. But Kroger is closing down a Livonia warehouse that's been there for 50 years and sending all these jobs to Ohio. So that they don't have to pay union wages, they don't have to pay union benefits. Because what employer likes to pay its employees decent wages and decent benefits when it can get away with paying them crap wages? And non-union wages are almost always crap wages. It's only through organized struggle and organizing that people get decent wages. It's been true since our grandparents' time, and a lot of us have forgotten it. Well, John Dingell spoke at a rally today, and I hope Michael call in and let us know how that went. 313-298-WRIF. So what do you think his constituents care about, the ones in Livonia and the ones in Dearborn? Whether he said, I don't take sides in this internecine struggle, or whether he's out there fighting for the jobs of our neighbors. Now let's go back to Niraj Waraku, this Free Press reporter, who wrote this story co-authored this story about Dingell. This next story is so repellent. I mean, it sort of reminds me of stuff you could have read in the 1950s about communism, when people start suspecting their neighbors. And he's talking about the fear of anti-Semitism among Detroit Jews. Metro Detroit Jews fear hatred. Anti-Semitism is a growing concern. And he quotes some people, too. He says, many people in Metro Detroit, many Jewish people in Metro Detroit feel under siege, not only worried about friends and family in the Middle East, but concerned about anti-Jewish rhetoric being heard from Dearborn to Hollywood and Seattle, where a Muslim family, a Muslim American, I'm sorry, let me say this again, it's very important. Many Jewish people in Metro Detroit feel under siege, not only worried about friends and family in the Mideast, but concerned about anti-Jewish rhetoric being heard from Dearborn to Hollywood and Seattle, where a Muslim American fatally shot a woman inside a Jewish community center last week. I don't even think he talks about, ever gets to the thing about, oh yeah, he's talking about, he's conflating this drunk anti-Semite, Mel Gibson, Hollywood, that's what he calls one guy, one nutball, far right-wing Christian fanatic. Mel Gibson kind of outs himself as the anti-Semite that he is, and a guy, also someone, a mentally disturbed man, murders people out of this misdirected rage about what's going on in the Middle East, and Niraj Waraku conflates that with an outpouring of community sadness and outrage in Dearborn at what's going on in the Middle East, what's happening to Lebanon. I was at that demonstration on July 18th. This is calumny. This is libel of the worst variety. This man, I wrote him a couple, I mean, he doesn't write back. They're above the, they're not going to respond to critics. And let's see here. I think it says something in here. At a rally in Dearborn on July 18th, Muslim demonstrators held signs equating the Star of David, a Jewish symbol, with the Nazi sign. One of the things is important. I write a lot. And I'm very, very aware of precision. I mean, the person that wrote really good stuff about writing was George Orwell, the guy that wrote 1984, because writing can, it's a medium. It's not reality. All right? I was at that demonstration. There were 10,000 people, probably about 98% Middle Eastern people, particularly Lebanese, and about 2% people that were driven by ethical outrage at what Israel was doing to Lebanon. I saw a number of, I wouldn't say a number, I saw a few signs, maybe three, that had a Star of David and an equal sign and then a swastika. Now, a Jewish symbol, I mean, that's kind of a weird way to say that's, I mean, that's also on the flag of Israel. So essentially what they're saying is Israel is acting like the Nazis. This isn't anti-Semitism. This says Israel is acting like the Nazis. Extracting punishment 10-1, collective punishment, raising cities, R-A-Z-I-N-G. So maybe they're wrong, okay? But so the equation is not appropriate. And maybe they're doing it just to say to Jews, look, you know, look at your experience with the Nazis, we feel similarly. They're not saying it's genocide, but whatever they're saying, whether it, I mean, it's not a good sign in the sense that people don't relate to it well. Others chant, well, and it says, Muslim demonstrators held signs equating the Star of David, a Jewish symbol, with the Nazi sign. Now, so there was like three people. There was 10,000 people, almost everyone from Dearborn, and demonstrators. So, and let's give it to them. Let's say they're completely anti-Semitic. I mean, anti-Semitism exists in this society. So, you know, one of the sick prejudices that still hangs out in our world. And so three among 10,000. But think, whoa, others chanted support for Hezbollah and its leader, Hassan Nasrallah. There was a little of that. In fact, some people, there was a group of young men, and you got to remember, it's the young men who act on their anger. And this was being created in Dearborn. These are Americans and American citizens. Probably most of them, given their age, were born here in the United States. And a little pocket of them started chanting, death to Israel. And people ran over to them and said, stop that. Stop that. Don't do that. That hurts our cause. So, again, a tiny minority, the 10,000. That alarmed some Jewish people. How the hell does this guy know that it alarmed some Jewish people? A column written about anti-Semitism expressed at the Dearborn rally was published last week in The Forward, one of the top Jewish American newspapers, and Haaretz, one of the Israel's largest newspapers. The chief U.S. correspondent, Shmuel Rosner, wrote in a column, had the July 18th rally been held in Europe instead of Dearborn, it would likely have been officially classified as an anti-Semitic event. Again, this is libel. This is calumny. I was there. I was impressed at how sad these people were and how little anger was being exhibited as they saw the country of their origin being destroyed by this defenseless country being destroyed from the air by U.S. planes, by precision bombings that Bush sped along to the Israelis, and to call this an anti-Semitic event. So in other words, if you come out and you say, Israel is terrible, it's destroying our homeland, you're anti-Semitic. These people are A, sick, and B, dangerous. They're dangerous to democracy. They want to stifle debate. They want to dictate policy. And you know what kind of country you live in if where policy is dictated? Yeah, a dictatorship. Let me see there. To make matters worse, Mel Gibson's anti-Semitic remarks last week about Jews causing wars illustrate that those in the Jewish community consider unfair criticism of Israel. To them, Israel's battle is necessary to protect the nation from the threat posed by Hezbollah. So again, this democratic outpouring of protest, because that's what it is. In the Constitution, it says we have the right to assemble for redress of grievances. And that's what I did, and that's what 10,000 Arab people did as well. That becomes anti-Semitic. It becomes an outrage. It becomes something you have to do damage control with the pro-Israeli groups. This is sick. This is really terrible. All right, I got more to say, so do you. Peter Werby is my name. Blame it all on me. Hey, yeah, all right. See whether I'll do some damage control on Monday. I'll be damned if I ever would. I'll be right back.
And now, a word from the Riff Legal Eagles. Unless otherwise stated, all entrants for WRIF contests must be at least 18 years of age and a legal resident of the United States. A household is eligible to win one contest per 30 days every 6 months for prizes valued at $600 or higher. Greater Media Detroit and its affiliates, promotional sponsors, advertising and promotional agencies, and other radio and television stations in the Detroit ADI are not eligible to participate. One entry per person. No purchase or other consideration is necessary to participate in the contest. Void where prohibited. Prizes are not transferable or redeemable for cash. 101 WRIF reserves the right to substitute any prize for one of equal or greater value. By participating in the contest, contestants consent to the broadcast and or publication of their name, voice, face, and or likeness without compensation. Participants listening online at www.wrif.com may receive audio that is delayed by as much as 60 seconds later than the over-the-air transmission, which could potentially affect chances of winning. General contest rules are available online at www.wrif.com or during regular business hours at the WRIF Studios, One Radio Plaza, Detroit, Michigan, 48220.
You're listening to WRIF.com. WRIF.com.
WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
All right, thank you very much, and welcome back. Our number 313-298-WRIF. We're talking about Israel's destruction of Lebanon and what that will lead to. Let's see. Anonymous in New York wrote into calltalkyes@yahoo.com, says, can you hope that Israel will lose and not be anti-Semitic? I think so. I mean, I just don't get it. There are people that hate Jews, and it doesn't matter what they do. They can be left-wing, right-wing. They can be in the United States or England or Israel, and they despise them. They have all these wacky conspiracy theories about them and what have you. We're talking about Israel here. And Israel, it may have already lost in many ways. The war is going extraordinarily badly for them. They're internationally, the perception of what Israel's doing is horrifying the world's population, and rightly so. So can you hope that Israel will lose and not be anti-Semitic? If Israel was to lose, and I'm not even sure how it really could, I have a feeling that it could very well lose politically. Because what it thought it was going to do was to be able to just inflict maximum damage, destroy the Hezbollah infrastructure, set up a buffer zone in southern Lebanon, and be done with it. Because what Israel wants is peace with no resistance. It wants to be able to do what it's doing without having anyone say boo. That's why they had planned way in advance all of these adventures to attack Hamas in the occupied territories and to attack Hezbollah in Lebanon. This is very similar to Bush's plans to invade and occupy Iraq. Thing. This was going to be an easy one. Hasn't turned out that way. Well, I was reading an email from Mike from Canton just a little while ago, and here he is. Mike, hi, it's Peter Werby, and you're on the air.
Hi, Peter. How you doing?
Thanks for joining us. Remind people, though, what we're talking about.
Kroger's relocating their perishable distribution to Central Ohio, and they're just basically abandoning a lot of people who worked hard for them for a lot of years. Just walking away from the area and walking away from a lot of dedicated people.
Yeah, and just essentially to get so they won't have to pay union wages.
Well, it is unionized down there, but we've seen their wage scale and their insurance that they offer, and it's substandard compared to ours. And also there was essentially no offer for us to be part of it. That's the part that I find the most insulting.
I think you wrote me, though, that they were offering you a job down there.
Right, if you wanted to fill out an application. And that, to me, that means that the application still needs to be approved. You could start out at the bottom as essentially maybe even a part-time employee, and I would have less seniority than someone who started working there last week. And I've been with the company for 16 years.
And you're a Teamster, are you, Mike?
Yes.
Yeah, and of course, that's where Jimmy Sr. goes back to organizing Kroger way back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
We did the movie somewhat. They changed the name, but that was us.
Yeah, sure. Hey, now, was there this rally? Did that go on?
It happened. I believe what you were talking about earlier, Mr. Dingle's damage control kept him away from where he's planned to appear, but they did have the rally, and there was a good turnout, but I was a little disappointed. It didn't seem like there was any communication with Kroger.
Mm-hmm.
They were rallying the troops, but I didn't really hear much information.
So Dingle actually was scheduled to appear but did not, or was invited.
Yes, he was scheduled. I don't know if he did not show up. I mean, it might have. I'm not in on that part of the scheduling, but originally I'd heard he was supposed to be there, and he wasn't. I don't know why right now.
Okay. Well, I was maybe I was complimenting him too much. I mean, if he let this deal with refusal to criticize either side in this war keep him away from supporting his constituents who are losing their jobs in Livonia, that's pretty lame. But we don't know that either, do we?
No, we don't. I can't really say why he wasn't there.
So let me put it in the crudest terms that I can. So you guys are just kind of screwed.
Pretty much.
Damn.
I mean, they're still talking about leafleting the stores to let people know what's going on. There's already been plenty. They've already closed the meat plant, and they've been moving the meat out of Ohio. And there's already been incidents with the meat. I think there's four trailers of meat so far that have to have been just completely thrown away, which is thousands and thousands of dollars just for temperature reasons. You know, hauling meat for 4 hours in a truck when mm-hmm. our farthest haul, I believe, would be our Mount Pleasant store from here, and I think it's still under 3 hours in a truck, and they're going to be hauling I believe we have 127 stores, and they're going to be hauling all of them over 4 hours from Ohio.
Well,
every day.
I'm sure they would say that it's an economy of scale, a centralization that I'm sure lower wage scales and benefit scales is appealing
right.
to them. But that's what is so, I don't know if you use the word galling or insulting, that the communities and the people in them and the people that worked hard for them, there's no consideration for them. It's just all bottom line, and can they... Well, I can't think of a way in the world that I could really help, but if you can think of anything, let me know.
Well, one thing I'd like to point out is they like to play the name game a little bit. Our front sign says Advantage Logistics.
Yeah.
And they've claimed that, I saw a quote in the paper that says they don't even own the warehouse that we're working in. And that's, maybe true on the title someplace, but every can of Campbell's soup that you've bought at a Kroger for the last 50 years or any other product you can think of from a Kroger has come through this warehouse. And to try to distance themselves that way from us is insulting again.
Yeah. I mean, that's the way they go. You give them your life and they dump you in the wastebasket. Thank you, Mike. And best of luck. Keep us informed, okay?
All right. Thanks, Pete.
All right. And on the face of it, it doesn't look like a damn thing we can do, right? The anonymous forces of the market. That's one of the reasons I hate the anonymous forces of the market, because I don't want my life or your life ruled by that. Why can't our lives be ruled by the compassion of community rather than the anonymous forces of the market? Screw the anonymous forces of the market. Here's Eric in Livonia. Thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. Hi, you're on the air.
Thank you very much, Mr. Werby. I appreciate you taking my call, and thank you very much for talking about the Kroger situation. I am an employee of the company for 20 and a half years, and one thing that I'd like to also add, what Mike was saying, that SuperValu runs the company, and what Kroger did was they hired a third-party company to run this facility. So when it comes to us striking the Kroger company, we can't, because technically we are working for SuperValu and not Kroger's.
Sweet.
And that's a real rotten business way to get rid of the Teamsters. They can't come out and just say it to our face. They got to hire a third-party company to run this place into the ground. And you got 550 dedicated workers here that really do work hard. They come out about 3 months ago, and they said that we are the number one flagship warehouse that Kroger owns.
Mm-hmm.
On the on-time production, the mispicks, the whole nine yards, everything you can think of, we're the number one flagship facility, and they're going to close us down.
Well, they probably got some bean counter somewhere who did some cost-benefit analysis paper and said, if we close this down, then we will blah, 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 and we'll make more money. I'm sure no one in the management said, well, what about all our employees? What about the effect on our community? What about the effect on their plans, their lives, their children, their future? And they probably said, we feel real bad about that.
That's about it. Thank you very much for talking about it, and you do have a great show.
Well, thank you so much, Eric. I appreciate it. And one of the things that I love about democracy is that it empowers people. If it's an authentic democracy, if you get to you come out every 4 years and vote for Tweedledum or Tweedledumber, Tweedledee or Tweedledumber. Sorry, I'm ruining that. Tweedledee or Tweedledum. I think they used to say that. Tweedledum, Tweedledee or Tweedledum. I don't know. I'll think about that one. But anyway, authentic democracy, where we all have a relatively similar ability to affect events. But this society is not a democracy. It's run by a powerful, insulated elite that manages everything from the economy to the political system in its own interest. And it's all very small, narrow interest. And then there's people a little down the road that just skip to the loo, whatever the elites call for, right? We got to, you know, people talk about our country back. We just got to get our democracy. I don't even back. Did we ever have it? Here's Dan in Pontiac. Dan, hi, it's Peter Werbe. You're on the air.
Peter, hi. It's great talking to you.
Thank you.
Anonymous forces of the market. You know, that really hit me where, I mean, I totally says it all. The anonymous forces of the market. But you know who the market actually should be run by?
Who?
We the people. Now, when we were taking off the gold standard and put on the market standard, that's where the downfall of our country has started.
When we what? Sorry, say
when we were taking off the gold standard and put it on the stock market standard. When Nixon took us off the gold standard.
You know what, though, Dan? I mean, there's not enough gold in the world to back the amount of currency that they need.
I totally agree.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is, now, since they've done that, they're working for this corporate world, this one corporate world, and by taking all these jobs, like from out of here in Michigan and sending them away,
uh-huh.
I totally empathize with these guys from Kroger. I worked for Lear Corporation, Auburn Hills.
Uh-huh.
I worked there for 5 years. When it came down to finding us new jobs, the UAW sold us right out. There was 400 and some of us in this plant. When we went to negotiations, there was no Lear committee person allowed to go for negotiations. They had committee people from other plants, from GM Rochester, or from Truck and Bus. They had some guys from there, some guys from Region 1, go down and do the negotiation for us.
Okay.
And what they did was they closed us down instead of finding new work for us. Now, we, as the people of this country, you know, it's got to stop sometime. We got to stop and we got to take a look at what they're doing by taking all these jobs away from us. They're making us into another third world country.
Oh, yeah, that's what it's going to be. Yeah, the idea of Mexico and the way wages are there. I mean, think about these auto plants in Mexico. They are state of the art. They turn out the products that, so we buy American, right? So we buy a Ford, like I dutifully did. And these guys are making, I don't know what, they're probably making about 15, I don't know what the wages are, but there's something like 15 bucks a day.
I'll tell you, we had material coming out of Juarez, Mexico. And they were the seat covers for the Bonneville, the Buick, Park Avenue, and the Sabre. And they were sending them up here from Juarez, Mexico, and we had a problem with the material. Some of the seams are coming apart or whatnot. So they sent two gentlemen. I'm Hispanic, by the way. They sent two men up to do rework on the material up here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, because they're from Mexico, I thought, well, I'll go over and I'll talk to them and see how they are, you know, get to know them and welcome them to the plant. You know, and I didn't know what they were getting paid or nothing like that. Now, I talked to these gentlemen when I first started talking to them. I was speaking English because I thought they spoke English. And they both, you know, looked at me kind of odd. And they kind of, like, you know, quiet. They didn't want to say nothing to me. So I started speaking to them in Spanish. I introduced myself. My full name is Ben Felipe Reyes. And they, you know, in kind, they responded with their name. And I started speaking to them in Spanish. Well, it got along the line. I started to get familiar with them. And out of curiosity, I asked them, and these guys are managed, mind you. Okay,
yeah.
They sent these guys up here to do the rework. Now, I asked them what, you know, what they were getting paid. And when I asked them, their jaws dropped. They didn't want to say. And I, you know, I said, it's okay. I said, you know, you could tell me. And they told me they were getting paid $16 a day for being up here.
Wow, for being up here.
For being up here, and they're working in a UAW plant. This is what Lear allowed them to do.
Wow.
Okay, now, I told them what I was making. I was making $26.29 an hour as a UAW member. Okay, life was good. Bills were getting paid. My children were getting fed. Roof over their head. Bill, you know, like I said, bills are getting paid. You know, it was great. Okay, now they saw the chance to where they could send more work out of the country, and they sent our cars that we were building for the seats. They sent those jobs to Canada, and they sent some down to Mexico.
Sure, Buy American, right?
Exactly, Buy American. Yeah. You know what, Peter? We cut our throats back in the 70s when they had those Buy the Union label,
mm-hmm.
Look for the Union label commercials, and Buy American. You know, all those that bought the Nissans and and jumped for joy, old Toyota.
Yeah.
You know, we cut our own throats, and we're still doing it today. You know, instead of taking a look at the stuff that we buy at Myers or Kroger's and seeing what exactly where they come from and refusing to buy that and forcing them people to hire again in this country to make the product, to sell the product that we ourselves.
Well, Dan, you know, I've told the story before about a friend of mine who was a friend of mine's father who was a union president. When you'd come in his house 20 years ago, he'd grab your shirt, see where it was made. Now, if you don't buy something from was made in a foreign country, you probably won't be able to buy anything. Dan, I got to go, but thank you for your input into all this. We'll be right back on Night Call, 313-298-WRIF.
This is WRIF.com.
More Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
Thank you very much. Night Call is brought to you this hour by Waking Up Metro Detroit's Sweatshop Free Clothing Store. It's located in the Universal Mall at 12 Mile Road in DeQuinder and Warren. Or you can go to wakingupstore.com. And this coming Friday, August 11th, Emma Henderson is going to be doing a book signing there. She was the past president of the Detroit City Council. It's going to be 7 p.m. This coming Friday. Saturday, September 16th, I'm going to be there speaking as part of the 2006 Waking Up Green Expo. You can find all this information, by the way, either at their site, wakingupstore.com, or you can go to my site, Peter Werby, PeterWerbe.com. A lot of good stuff, too, on the Israeli invasion of Lebanon. Stuff you don't see in the mainstream because they only tell one side of it, right? Okay, oh yeah, this little item, and then we'll get right back to your call. So we were talking, actually I've been doing most talking about Lebanon, but many of you talking about what's happening to Detroit area working people, where these companies get the great idea, hey, let's save a little money, let's destroy the economy of Detroit and our workers' lives by taking the job somewhere else, right? Well, I think most of you know that Floyd Landis has been stripped of his Tour de France prized jersey. I don't know. Does he still have it? It says about the only chance Floyd Landis has, I guess he has it, of keeping his prize yellow jersey for winning the Tour de France will now be likely decided by an appeals process. He's flunked two drug tests in a row, so I think he's kind of out of it. But what struck me about this was his mother, who apparently is a Mennonite in eastern Lancaster County, Pennsylvania. I saw her on television, and she said, and she had a big smile on her face, and she said, this is all God's work. He's watching us, and in the end, it'll all come out. I'm thinking, God's watching the Tour de France? Focus, dude. Look what's happening in your homeland. Jeez. All right, let's go back to our phones. 313-298-WRIF and 313-298-9743. And this is, if I can make this thing work, come on. You know how many, I have five mouses or mice. What do you call many computer mouses? I guess mouses. Five mouses here. Anyways, Rich from Wayne. Rich, hi. It's Peter Werby. You're on the air. Hello. Yeah, hi.
Hey, I was just talking about the Israeli-Lebanon thing.
Mm-hmm.
I work for a Jewish man in Dearborn.
Yeah.
And I work with a lot of Arab people. And I don't understand their, rationale about they come over here and they think it's all good and fine, and they yell about, what's going on over there. But I don't think that we should be supplying Israel with all these weapons and all this stuff when they're over here making all of our money.
Wait a minute. What's your ethnic origin? In Europe, where'd your folks come from? Way back.
I'm pretty much English, Irish, a little bit of German.
Well, that's what they said about the Irish when they came over here. Same thing. In fact, the Irish were heavily discriminated against, and there were signs that saying "workers wanted, no Irish need apply."
I totally agree with that. But like where I work, the owner of my company, he's a single owner, and this is almost a $1 billion company, which is in Dearborn, which is like right in the right outskirts of Dearborn in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
But we have very many Arabs that work there. Most of them come from Yemen, and we have a lot of Yugoslavians and Albanians, Americans.
Yeah.
They come over here, they're hard workers and they do whatever, and we're making all kinds of money I mean, and I don't see why we have to send all this money back over there.
Well, I certainly agree with that. Why we're with the problems we have here, with the fact that we're the only country, the only industrial country. In fact, we're supposed to be the richest country. It just doesn't get spread around as much as in other countries. We can't even afford a national health program like Canada has, and England has, and Ireland has, and Germany has, to name the places where you came from. No, I agree with you completely. Well, also, it must be kind of nice hanging with people of different ethnic origins. You learn about their culture, their food, their music, and all that. Always loved it. Thank you, Rich. Appreciate you calling in. You have a very good one. Here is Paul. Paul's in Oak Park. Hi, Paul. It's Peter Werby. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you?
Good.
I want to congratulate you. You've given the most distorted presentation of what's going on in Lebanon that I've ever heard on the radio.
Well, you know what? You probably would never hear anything like this on the radio because all you hear is the sound of one hand clapping. There's a whole body of contrary opinion and fact and everything that doesn't ever get mentioned in the mainstream radio, and it's to the shame of mainstream radio and mainstream television and mainstream newspapers.
Well, let me mention a few of the facts that you didn't mention.
Okay.
Let's talk about Hezbollah, first of all. Hezbollah is a universally recognized terrorist organization.
No, you know, we all know this, Paul. What's your point?
Let me talk about this.
You know what happens? If you kill women and children and you don't have a uniform on, you're a terrorist. If you kill women and children and you have uniforms on, you're a soldier. Right?
Are you willing to listen to the other side?
Yes, and you know what? I'll let you say some things, but the other side is relentlessly given to us on CNN, on ABC, Detroit News, Detroit Free Press, you name it, it's on there. What I'm saying, just as you said, you've never heard anything like this on radio before. Everything you're going to say, I could repeat in exactly the terms that you would tell us, and that everyone who's been paying any attention to it on mainstream media has already heard.
So therefore, we don't need to have a dialogue about it. We just need to hear your side.
Well, wait a minute. But you get to hear the other side all the time, this relentless drumbeat. And when anyone has, what's it called, the chutzpah to say, gee, I don't support Israel, he has to go around to these pro-Israel groups and say, well, that's not really what I meant, right?
Excuse me, that's called a political process.
Oh, come on, it's called money. And that's the political corrupting process that is what makes American politics so undemocratic.
Excuse me, every group always tries to get its message out. There's nothing, that is the political process. But let me go through some of the facts that you forgot to mention. Hezbollah is an international, universally recognized terrorist organization that's absolutely committed themselves to the utter destruction of Israel. Not only the utter destruction.
Well, do you think they maybe have a little bit of an attitude because stemming from 1982 when Israel, under false pretenses, invaded Lebanon, killed 20,000 people living in Lebanon and set up a permanent occupation zone, and that's what gave rise to Hezbollah, right? So thank you, Israel, for creating Hezbollah.
Excuse me. When Israel was in there, there was no Hezbollah, number one. Number two, Israel complied with the United Nations, withdrew to the United Nations according to the agreements of the United Nations.
How long did they stay there?
Why does that matter?
Well, they stayed there for 18 years.
And then they responded, and then they withdrew.
Well, gee, finally they said, oh, maybe we ought to get out of here. Listen, in terms of, how do you rate somebody as a terrorist group? I mean, I would say that when women and children are killed, whether they're Israeli or whether they're Palestinian or Lebanon, no matter what good reason they were killed for, it's reprehensible, isn't it?
I have a question. Why are you not speaking about the fact that Hezbollah, in the last 3 weeks, Hezbollah sent over 3,000 missiles aimed specifically at civilian centers?
Well, when did it start? Did they just all of a sudden say, I got an idea, let's launch all our missiles at Israel? Or did something else happen that precipitated that?
Would you like to speak of that?
You asked me a question. I said, did Hezbollah all of a sudden start rocketing Israel, or did some event precipitate that?
Let me answer you.
Okay.
The missiles that have been coming from Lebanon into Israel didn't just start as a result of the kidnapping of Israeli citizens and Israel's reaction to that. This has been going on for the past months and years. the missiles have been flying in the entire north of Israel. This has been a constant problem. You see, it's the responsibility of a country to be able to defend its borders.
Now, it's a responsibility of a country to administer a system of justice to people that they have under their control. And as long as Israel holds Lebanese prisoners, as long as it holds land like, Sheba Farms and the Golan Heights, as long as it against all international law and all UN resolutions, continues to occupy the West Bank and Gaza, that's going to happen. But let's talk about women and children killed. How many children has Israel killed?
Excuse me, when
how many children has Israel killed?
How many children have been blown up by terrorist acts? What?
Well, I'll tell you what. Let's look at some of the figures here. 121 Israeli children have been killed by Palestinians. That is absolutely reprehensible, is it not? Is it or is it not?
Whenever you target children, it's of course reprehensible.
Okay. Now, there's been 763 Palestinian children killed by Israelis in the last 6 years. But they didn't target them, did they? All they did, they were trying to kill Hamas, and they just happened to be collateral damage. So they were assassinating people in contravention of all international law, and so a bunch of kids got blown away. Well, Hamas targets them. Israel doesn't target them, but it manages to kill about six or seven times more. So who's more reprehensible?
First of all, you've subtly shifted the argument.
Well, that's all right. I don't mind doing it. How about just in general? How many Israelis have been killed and how many Palestinians have been killed in the last 6 years?
Every time I start to talk, you interrupt me.
Well,
let's try to focus the conversation. The conversation was on what's going on in Lebanon. It wasn't, if you want to discuss Gaza and the West Bank, it's a separate issue. Hezbollah had absolutely nothing to do with what was going on in Gaza.
Well, it is part of a whole strategy that Israel wants to maintain its status of repression of the Palestinian people, occupying illegally land, seizing land over and over again, and pay no cost. It ain't going to happen. We've seen this over and over and over again. No justice, no peace. Well, here, let me just give a few. This is very relevant indeed. Israelis and Palestinians killed since September 29, 2000. 1,000 Israelis, absolutely reprehensible. These are civilians. 4,000 Palestinians, 4-1. Israelis and Palestinians injured since September 29, 2000. 7,600 Israelis, 30,000 Palestinians. And on and on and on and on like that. UN resolutions targeting Israel. 65 UN resolutions, almost every single one of them ignored by Israel. And let's see. Political prisoners and detainees. One Israeli is being held prisoner by Palestinians. 9,599 Palestinians currently imprisoned by Israel. Doesn't sound real good, does it?
Yeah, well, once again, you shifted the argument.
Well, that's all right.
But let me explain this idea.
Go ahead.
You want me to respond? Hello?
What? What'd you
again,
say?
Once again, you shifted the argument. I thought the discussion was Lebanon. But if you want to discuss this, you have to realize the idea of making moral equivalents, it would be the equivalent, just to give you an idea. When America was attacked in Pearl Harbor, to say, well, how many soldiers were killed? Well, how many Japanese civilians were killed when we bombed Hiroshima and Nagasaki? The way war works, which apparently you don't seem to understand, when you're attacked, in order to defend yourself, obviously by definition, you're going to end up killing innocent citizens. There's nothing you could do.
There is something they can do. None of this would have happened, for instance. Let me just ask you another question. Israel was created and born out of terrorism and armed resistance to occupation in the identical manner of both Hamas and Hezbollah, was it not?
Absolute distortion.
Well, wait a minute. People that are blinded by ethnicity are don't have any moral or ethical standing whatsoever, in my estimate. So, in other words, when there's an Irgun army that acts militarily against British occupation in 1940, when you have Jewish terrorists blowing up hotels filled with people, when you have UN representatives assassinated by Jewish terrorist groups, then that's different. That's a fight for freedom. But when other people do it, they're terrorists, right?
When you go into a pizza shop and you go off with a suicide bomb, when you send missiles which are filled with ball bearings that are dipped in rat poison to kill as many citizens...
Well, how about this? Why don't we give the Palestinians F-16s, and then they won't... You know, car bombs and suicide bombers are the poor man's F-16. I mean, what you won't... See, no one's buying what you're saying. You're blinded by ethnicity, and what you won't really accede to is a necessity to create justice rather than the domination of what's happened, the domination of the Palestinian people. There was ethnic cleansing to create an exclusivist state. I mean, how the hell would you like to live in a state that was set up for Christians?
Can I ask you a question?
Sure, one more, then I'm got to hear.
No problem. You know that there's Arabs that are members of the Knesset? Is that your example?
Oh, yeah. Well, I know. You know what? Ask Arabs how they feel about their status within Israel. There's not one of them that doesn't realize that they're second-class citizens. It's a Jewish state. How would you like to live in a Christian state? Goodbye. Maybe now I'll have to... What's his name they have to do? John Dingell, U.S. Representative John Dingell, was doing damage control Tuesday after telling a local TV interview that he wouldn't take sides in the current Mideast conflict. Is this my last show? No. I don't see a next on here, so I'm just going to go with the person that's been kind of the longest. Tim from Detroit. Tim, hey, it's Peter Werbe. You're on the air.
Yeah, how you doing? I must say, as a man of Greek origins, I don't hate the Turks that much. I mean, there have been so many things said about the Middle East, and probably about a minute or so that I have to talk. I probably couldn't say much original, but I would reference Noam Chomsky. And he actually was on C-SPAN a few years ago talking about his experiences with his family in the 1930s when they tried to settle in Israel. And the way Chomsky told it on television was that at first his family was for the concept of Zionism and about a Jewish homeland, but they saw so much bloodshed. And particularly it struck Chomsky on the part of his ethnicity, which is Jewish, that his family out of conscience could not settle in Israel. Mm-hmm. So he came to the understanding, and this interview was a few years ago, I'm assuming his position was still the same, there has to be absolute peace in the Middle East. And the concept of a Zionist state is untenable. Now, this man is of high intellect, and, he's no crank.
No, certainly not. Well, there's one thing. There's not unanimity among American Jews, certainly. All you have to do is look through some websites, the stuff that never makes it into the mainstream news, to see Jewish Americans aghast at what Israel is doing. And you can go to my website. If you go to Peter Werbe, PeterWerbe, PeterWerbe.com, and then click on the link to this current war, and it's filled. The whole bottom section of it is just filled with Israeli peace groups. Everything I'm saying, every single thing I'm saying is echoed there. I'm echoing here.
Well, there are a lot of former, from what I found, a lot of former people in the Israeli military, actually, because I think their conscription is mandatory.
Yeah.
They've come out and are highly critical of not just the latest war in Lebanon and the Gaza Strip, but also just the whole policy of Israeli collective punishment.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
And, the Israeli army is very hardcore when it comes to, collective punishment.
Yeah, there's, I can't even pronounce some of these Hebrew names. Jewish Alliance for Justice and Peace, Americans for Peace Now, Tikkun, very T-I-K-K-U-N. In fact, they have some good solutions on that.
Yeah.
Faculty for Israel, Israeli-Palestinian Peace, A Jewish Voice for Peace, Not in My Name, Jewish Peace Fellowship, Meretz, USA, Gush Shalom, I can't pronounce this one, Israeli-Palestinian Bereaved Families for Peace, Betzalem, the Israeli Foundation Center for Human Rights in the Occupied Territories, Jewish Peace Thread, the Shifa Fund. I mean, this goes on and on and on. So everything I'm saying, I mean, you can imagine this guy saying I'm distorting everything. Well, go to these websites of these Jewish groups, these Israeli groups, and they have criticisms that are stronger than mine.
Well, this gentleman, he also had a chicken to a lot of the European press. It presents a more balanced view. Like a good one is Agence France-Presse, and you can go to their website, and they do give both sides, but they talk about sort of the history and the background and how Israel was created and also the claims of the Palestinians and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not all necessarily a pro-Israel point of view around the world.
No, I agree. All right, thank you so much. I appreciate your call. Let's see. Peter writes in to Peter at calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Contrary to what this guy just said, I heard Condi Rice today on Tim Russert's show say that the European Union does not recognize Hezbollah as a terrorist organization. The United States and Israel are the only countries that do so, to my knowledge. I don't know whether that's the case or not. All right. Okay, I like this. Al from Inkster, there's a phrase called the invisible hand of the market. That is that, I think this is even from Adam Smith, the 18th century philosopher of capitalism, that talked that the market moved in a manner to kind of wind up serving everyone's interest, and he called it the invisible hand of the market. Al, you got a better phrase for it.
Well, for those of us that work for a living, it's become the invisible hand job of the market.
I love it. I'm stealing that, man.
Go right ahead.
It'll be in print somewhere, and you're not going to get credit. I'm not going to say I'm just going to use it.
Well, I actually stole it myself from one of my old friends in the old, if you remember, DSOC.
DSOC.
Democratic Socialist Organizing Committee.
Oh yeah.
Michael Harrington's group.
Oh yeah. Yeah, yeah.
But that's basically what it is, you know. They promise us, you know, you work hard, you'll get yourself a fair wage, you'll have yourself a nice life, you'll have good benefits, you'll have a retirement. And then, you know, well, the retirement's gone because the company goes bankrupt. You know, they do the shell game where, you know, they were talking about having different names. You know, you work for this company and then it changes names and, you know, there's all these corporate shells that you can't pierce the corporate veil.
Now, I was thinking about Buy American, and so you got all this content, foreign content for American cars. Now, when Toyotas and Honda and, is it not BMW, what is it, Mercedes, here in the American South, is everything they produce made here, do you know?
No, but I would gather not, because I'd assume they're going to the cheaper factories in Mexico and overseas, too.
They have
just,
yeah.
Just like the big three.
All cars.
I mean, I work.
Yeah, go ahead.
I ship auto parts for one of the big three companies, and a full third of the trucks, it seems, go to, you know, Mexico, and or they go to other places for transshipment to Brazil or Venezuela.
Every car is a world car now, and so we have our companies, these vaunted symbols of America, General Motors and Ford, can't seem to pour poop out of a boot if the instructions are on the heel, right? And then you got Kia and the Honda and Toyota. What gives with this?
Well, they're doing, you know, they're creating, you know, they're coming after our market, they're coming after our money, but hey. That's what business is all about.
The invisible hand job of the market. I love it. I'll send you a copy of whatever I write. Thank you, Al. I appreciate it. Let's see. Here's Kyle. Kyle's in Oxford. Go ahead.
Hey, what's up, Matt?
Hi, Kyle.
Yeah, I kind of want to talk about the start of this.
Sure.
A lot of people now are just really anti-Bush.
Mm-hmm.
Makes
sense.
They're pissed off at him because gas prices are going up. Probably a lot of other shit I don't know about. But, I mean, it's just...
Yeah? Yeah, how come nobody's...
I see these bumper stickers on people's cars that don't blame me, I voted for Kerry.
Yeah?
And Kerry, he wanted nothing to do with fighting back.
What are you talking about?
What am I talking about?
You think Bush is fighting back? Fighting back against what?
About freaking 9/11, man.
Well, wait a minute. 9/11? What? He's not fighting back against 9/11. He had the opportunity to fight back against 9/11, by trying to capture Osama bin Laden in Afghanistan, but they were so keen to go into Iraq, which had absolutely nothing to do with 9/11. And so we've now spent over $300 billion, had 2,500 plus people killed, and we've driven the country into a civil war.
But that's what really started it.
What started it?
9/11.
9/11 didn't start it. You don't know what you're talking about. Tell me how it did.
All right.
Go ahead. Yeah. You don't know, so don't make opinions on when you don't know, okay? You can't do that. This is a matter of life and death for people. Where is my little thing, too? Oh, wait a minute. I know where it is. You want the end of it all in Iraq? You want the absolute end of it all? The Shiite rally in Baghdad supports Hezbollah. Now, you got to remember, there's a lot of people in Iraq, but the main forces of the insurgency, the people that are directly fighting the United States troops, are the Sunnis, right? They're the people that have inflicted the most casualties on the United States forces. The Shiites are the ones that have pretty much formed the government, and they're the real power. And they're also, what we've created is a greater Iran, because those people that are quote, allies in Baghdad are completely sympathetic to Iran, and they're connected by the same religion of Shia. Now, in Baghdad on Saturday, tens of thousands of followers of the Shiite cleric Muqtada al-Sadr rallied in support of the Lebanese militia Hezbollah on Friday, denouncing Israel and the United States for igniting violence throughout the Middle East. Now, this is what our allies are. I mean, I know this al-Sadr has been anti-U.S. all along, but in Baghdad, somewhere between 250,000 and a million, I saw the photographs, I mean, you can tell me a million people turned out in Baghdad to denounce the United States. We've given them our treasury. We've given them our young men and our young women in a sense. And Bush is not trying to bring democracy there. It's nothing to do with 9-1-1. What it's all about is dominating the Iraq for control of oil. That's what all this mountain of corpses has been for. Sadr's organization claimed that a million people had attended. The U.S. military said it counted 14,000. Well, when you're counting, it takes a while. One, two, three. I mean, I saw these photographs. And here's what somewhere between 14,000 and a million Iraqi citizens are chanting. Hezbollah beloved, hit Tel Aviv, hit Tel Aviv, no, no Israel, no, no America. And finally, if Americans are strong enough, they should come face us. Why are we over there? Because people think we're fighting something about 9-1-1. Well, it's getting more and more dismal, like Kyle. Do you believe in Iraqi weapons of mass destruction? Did Saddam Hussein's government have weapons of mass destruction in 2003 when the United States illegally invaded it? Half of America apparently thinks so, according to a new poll. Half of us think that he had weapons of mass destruction. This is absolutely insanity. The facts are that Iraq, this is, let's see, this is from the Associated Press on Reuters News. The facts are that Iraq, after a four-year lapse in cooperating with inspections, acceded to UN Security Council's demand and allowed scores of experts to conduct more than 700 inspections of potential weapon sites from November 27, 2002, when they were ordered by the Security Council, to March 16, 2003. The inspectors said they could wrap up their work within months. Instead, the U.S. invasion aborted their work. They found no weapons of mass destruction while they were in there, and they said we could complete the inspection quickly. Bush invaded because he knew there were no weapons of mass destruction. It was a total, absolute, 100% lie. Let me see, where's the man here that was part of the team? Can't even think of his name off the top of my head. Ex-Marine and, come on, many of you remember him. I've had him on the show. Anyway, I won't quote him then. I'm flabbergasted, said Michael Massing, a media critic whose writings dissected the largely unquestioning U.S. news reporting on the Bush administration's shaky weapons of mass destruction claims in 2002 and 3. He said, the finding just has to cause despair among those of us who hope for an informed public able to draw reasonable conclusions based on evidence. There's also following this. Bush sent in, spent another like $20 million saying, there's got to be here somewhere. Remember he had that little joke thing where he's gone, oh, maybe they're here, maybe they're there. And they weren't. And he admitted it. They weren't there. He made a little mistake. Too bad for the tens of thousands of people that had to die. You watching CNN today? They had this thing, I had to turn it off, almost brought me to tears. American men, I guess a few women, veterans of Iraq that had lost limbs. You know, you got so much armor on in this 114-degree heat that's going on there every day in Baghdad. So you get your arm blown off, you get your leg blown off, but you don't die. So they were involved in these races on wheelchairs, on crutches, and it was an army of paraplegics, an army of amputees. They should have been all racing up to the White House to say, George Bush, you did this to me for no reason. Here's Jacob in Waterford. Jacob, hi. It's Peter Werby. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm 14, and I'm one of the only teenagers that I know that actually listens to the news and knows what's going on.
Yeah?
And I just wanted to say thank you for telling it like it is.
Well, good. Good. You know, there's some more. Every once in a while. 14 seems to be the magic age, Jacob, and every once in a while I get 14-year-olds that say they're the only ones. So, but, you know, as you get older, one thing, hang out with kind of older people. People start getting to be 16, they start taking, you know, they start becoming aware of things like this.
Okay, thank you for taking my call.
All right, thank you, Jacob. Thanks for being part of the show and for listening and for paying attention. It's Paul in Brighton. Thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. You're on the air.
Hello?
Hello.
How are you doing?
Good,
today?
Thanks.
Are you riding your bike?
Am I riding my bike? No, I'm broadcasting right now.
Well, okay. Just wondering, you know, you got to fight the power.
Yeah?
Fight the powers that be that hold everybody down. So, Hezbollah, how many times did they bomb Israel? I'm not trying to be funny, but they did. They attacked Israel. They had captured two of their people. Now, Iraq...
Wait, but Paul... Israel holds, I forgot, something like, why Hezbollah captured those soldiers? They wanted to hold them so they could bargain with them, so they could get Israel to release the women and children, the Lebanese women and children that are being held captive by Israel. Now, I don't believe in anybody being captive, and I think Hezbollah made a terrible mistake given the damage that Lebanon has suffered. I mean, I think that this whole thing that Israel probably will find out at the behest of the Bush administration and the neoconservatives in there to strike a simultaneous hammer blow against Hamas, the democratically elected leadership of the Palestinians, and Hezbollah, who was involved in relatively small numbers of military acts, something that probably could have been negotiated, particularly by releasing prisoners. But most of this was planned months in advance, if we're to believe a lot, including what appears in the Israeli press. All right, I got to go. Thank you.
And now, a word from the Riff Legal Eagles. Unless otherwise stated, all entrants for WRIF contests must be at least 18 years of age and a legal resident of the United States. A household is eligible to win one contest per 30 days every 6 months for prizes valued at $600 or higher. Radio Media Detroit and its affiliates, promotional sponsors, advertising and promotional agencies, and other radio and television stations in the Detroit ADI are not eligible to participate. One entry per person. No purchase or other consideration is necessary to participate in a contest. Void where prohibited. Prizes are not transferable or redeemable for cash. 101 WRIF reserves the right to substitute any prize for one of equal or greater value. By participating in the contest, contestants consent to the broadcast and or publication of their name, voice, face, and or likeness without compensation. Participants listening online at www.wrif.com may receive audio that is delayed by as much as 60 seconds later than the over-the-air transmission, which could potentially affect chances of winning. General contest rules are available online at www.wrif.com or during regular business hours at the WRIF Studios, One Radio Plaza, Detroit. Detroit, Michigan, 48220.
You're listening to WRIF.com.
WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much, and welcome to our final segment. I was thinking about something, but I guess I won't say it. About how 50% of people think that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction, and people like the one caller who thought that Iraq had something to do with 9/11. Where in the world did they get that idea? And you say, where did you get it? And there's this blank. You have to connect things up with facts. There has to be facts to back your ideas, particularly when it's life and death, particularly when it's our fortune that's being given away. Here's another poll. This is from Scripps Howard News Service. More than a third of the American public suspects that federal officials assisted in the 9/11 terrorist attacks or took no action to stop them so the United States could go to war in the Middle East. The national survey of 1,000 adults also found that anger against the federal government is at record levels, with 54% saying they are, quote, personally more angry at the government than they used to be. Well, I fit into both categories. I don't think that the federal government planned and executed 9/11, where I know many of you do. Boy, they're gonna, yeah, I know, and people are going to start thinking I'm part of the conspiracy now. But I think that and this will all come out, and it'll come out not like 100 years later, like we found out that the Spanish-American War at the turn of the last century was based on a lie, and then 30 years later we find out that the Vietnam War was based on a lie, an incident that never occurred, and all that. Things are going along a lot faster, so you know, you'll find out in your lifetime. Then here's my bet. that the idea that the United States would start extending military power in a manner that it hadn't recently was planned way in advance of 9/11. And here's what I think is going to come out, and it's not just like total suppositions, based on some stuff, and I want to, it's callers waiting, that the United States, under the plans of these neoconservatives, who turned out to be the biggest idiots in the world, everything they said would happen, hasn't happened. We're mired in Afghanistan. The Taliban are coming back. We're losing in Iraq by any measure of warfare or political successes and all of that. And all of this has been for naught, for absolute naught. All this death, all this destruction, all of this waste of money because of these schemers, these guys that thought they control world events in other regions thousands of miles from our home. Anyway, what I'm sure that they decided was the next time there was any attack on any U.S. asset anywhere in the world, they were going to hit Afghanistan and take out the Taliban. I don't think they knew that an attack of this magnitude was going to occur, but they sure dropped the ball when, Bush sure dropped the ball when he was told that Al-Qaeda was going to strike in the United States, when they were told that the possibility of plane hijacking was on their agenda. They had every warning sign in the world and did nothing. So it's either the worst misfeasance, in other words, it's just total screw-ups, or at worst, malfeasance, that it was done purposely. But why in the hell that Bush got a free ride on all of this is so far beyond me. Anyway, here, this is emails from Mike. He wrote into CallTalkYes at Yahoo.com. I was wondering what your take is on the report that due to the hurricane season being upon us, the Mideast conflicts and the oil pipe mess in Alaska, that the price per barrel could go over $100 by the end of this week. Gas at $4 plus per gallon, probably be about $5. Well, it's up around $3.19, and we're just going, as long as we're not doing anything. BP, one of the company that's shutting down the Alaska pipeline, what did they record? Something like 25% increase in profits or 40% increase in profit. What the hell? Why should they stop doing anything? They're making a fortune. If you enforce the law on them that their return on investment could be no more than it had previously to when this sharp spike took over, well, I don't think they would. I don't think they would have quite the trouble delivering the gasoline that was needed. All right, let's go back to our phone calls, and let's see. We're having some communication problems here because it doesn't say next. I'm going to go to Derek in Madison Heights. Derek, hi, you're on the air.
Hey, how you doing, Peter?
Doing good, thanks.
Oh, actually, a first-time caller.
Welcome.
No, I agree with you 9,000% on all the crap that's going on overseas.
Okay.
One thing I have to say, though, is don't you believe that maybe if people could freaking quit worrying about religion, that everybody could get along, meaning that
everything
has a religious war. You know what I'm saying?
Well, it certainly has a lot of aspects. Yeah, now religion is has been poisonous for the last 2,000 years or 3,000 years,
yeah. That's
for sure.
I mean, it's like, come on, man. I mean, everyone can get along without having a protocol, to follow, depending on where you're from.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's bullcrap,
It is. As long as we can't recognize the humanity of everyone, this is going to just continue. As long as people have this hatred of people based on their nationality or ethnicity or color, man, we are screwed. I'm going to go by these calls pretty quickly. Thank you for that. I think that's well said. All right. Here, Terry writes into CallTalk. Yes, at Yahoo.com. Little Georgie Bush will not get away with these deaths and maimings when he is standing before his maker. Please play War Pigs. That song is so relevant, so on the mark. It is indeed for people that aren't into classic rock. That's Black Sabbath. And very popular song. Ozzy and the band put it together during the time of the Vietnam War. Still could be played today. In fact, we play it on WRIF from time to time. Let's see. It's John and St. Clair Shores. Oop, did I? Yeah.
You don't mind if I shift gears on you?
Go ahead.
Huh? I just, you know what, I personally, I understand the whole Middle Eastern thing. I just get tired of it. Okay. I mean, there are some local issues that are of importance.
I wish we could talk about them. Please,
go
ahead.
Oh, my gosh, please. I mean, I was getting a headache. I mean, and I'm not to point my finger at anyone, but you've got so many people that seem to be so concerned about stuff that's happening overseas, and I have empathy for the soldiers. I was in the Air Force. I was volunteer, but that was back in '88.
So what are the local issues? Tell me.
The local issues, well, number one for me, which is a direct connection to oil, and how we think about how we consume things in this world is the bus system here, the smart bus system.
All right.
I'm Mr. Advocate, and I will be calling. I mean, the primary is coming up. This is a local issue that's important to everybody in the Tri-County area, and it affects everybody directly. And I hope you aren't one of those people that would love to see the bus system killed.
No, we need more mass transit.
Well, you know what? I live in the St. Clair Shores, Grossy Pointy area, and there's a lot of the attitude is, well, I don't drive the damn thing. Why should I have $50 increased in my taxes? Do you have an answer for that?
Oh, God.
I know. Oh, God is right. But that's, I mean, I'm grassroots in terms of when I hear people talk.
Yeah.
That's the attitude. And you know what? This is what I thought. Last year, the Red Wings were shoo-in. They lost.
Yeah.
I'm kind of wondering about this now, and I'm kind of worried. I thought that for sure it would pass, and, you know, I don't know anymore. So I'm going to talk about it. I'm going to start calling every week.
I wish you would. And one thing is, I think the whole idea of mass transit is going to make a lot more sense to people as gas prices go up. I mean, there is some thought among people that advocate it, both because it's reasonable and also because it's environmentally sound, that high gas prices will be a driving force behind mass transit, which, of course, it would. But in the meantime, a lot of people, particularly poor people, are getting screwed. But, John, keep in touch. I appreciate that. Hey, at 1 a.m. Eastern time here on WRIF, we're going to have a couple of really interesting interviews. I enjoyed talking to both these guests so much. Harvey Wasserman going to talk about global warming and oil. And in fact, John, you may be interested in this because it speaks directly to it. And then Nicholas von Hoffman, a journalist who was fired from CBS years ago. Wait till you hear this story. It's funny. And he's written a book called A Devil's Dictionary of Business. Here is Jason in Clinton Township. Jason, it's Peter Werby. You're on the air. Welcome.
Yeah, how you doing?
Doing good.
Yeah, I just, you know, I had a comment. We as Americans have our priorities a little screwed up on the whole Middle East, and even 9/11, as big as a tragedy as it was, you know, that same year, 44,000 people died in auto accidents. But, you know, nobody rushed out to, you know, declare war on auto safety.
Well, you can barely call auto deaths accident. Because they know it's going to occur. Can you imagine if you said you've got an invention that could help people and what some field, and you said, are there any drawbacks to it? And you say, well, yeah, it kills almost 500,000 people every decade, injures probably 30 times more than that, and causes billions of dollars worth of damage. You say, oh, what the hell? Go ahead. Let's introduce it.
Yeah, you know, I think it's, you know, ridiculous, you know, but we can, you know, 3,000 people die. You know, I feel for the families and everything, but, you know, 3,000 people in the grand scheme of America is really a minute amount.
Well, Jason, there's no, see, then you're going to piss people off by saying that they're different problems and they should be addressed. I mean, we should have had the kind of intelligence and security that would have stopped that from happening. And that was a real problem. That was an absolute total 100% failure of the part of the Bush administration. They should have been impeached for allowing a catastrophic result of that magnitude to occur. So that's one problem. The other problem is auto safety. But people don't want to address it because what are you going to do about this? We have this absolutely catastrophic, murderous transportation system, right?
Right, for sure.
And I don't want to give up my car. Do you want to give up your car?
No, I don't want to give mine up either, but I'd feel a lot better if we could do something to make them safer, for sure.
Yeah, well, I guess maybe they're going to make them totally like Dodge cars and ex-Senator John Glenn, the astronaut and Democratic senator from Ohio. He and his wife had, a fairly severe auto accident, but they had side and front airbags. So maybe we can just get them fixed up so we can go crashing into one another and nothing will happen. But in the meantime, who doesn't know someone who has not been in an auto accident? And most of us know someone, I don't know, most of us, I think, know somebody who was at least severely injured. And many of us, myself included, know people who were killed in automobile accidents. One of the things, I always get nervous about driving to the airport. I don't have much of a feeling about flying. It's a little weird taking off and being up in this box high in the air, but they don't crash very much, hardly at all, next to never. But I'm always thinking, man, would it be weird if I got rubbed out driving to the airport? All right, thanks a lot. Appreciate your call. I agree with you that more auto safety. I wonder what could be done. Maybe get more of us out of cars and into mass transit. Here's Joe in Detroit. Hi, Joe. You're on the air. Joe.
Yeah.
Hey, yeah, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, a quick question for you. It's like, what's your take on seeing that you're against George Bush, I think. What's your take on David Icke?
David Icke?
Do you know who that is?
Is he some minister?
He's Bush as much as you are. He mostly focuses on how the Bush administration, government, and all that stuff is part of Illuminati.
Oh, I love it.
So what's your take on Illuminati? I mean,
the Illuminati. Well, it's a nice story. There's a book called The Illuminati Trilogy by Robert Anton Wilson. Robert Anton Wilson, which I read and thought was absolutely fascinating. But Bush part of the Illuminati. Speaking of here, this was a guy at a very conservative megachurch in Minneapolis, outside of Maplewood, Minnesota. Kept getting asked to distribute voter guides and endorse Republican candidates and endorse politicians from the pulpit and set up a table in the lobby promoting anti-abortion work. He said, after refusing each time, Mr. Boyd finally became, let me see, what's his whole name, Reverend Gregory A. Boyd. And he finally became fed up. Before the last presidential election, he preached six sermons called The Cross and the Sword, in which he said the church should steer clear of politics, give up moralizing on sexual issues, stop claiming the United States as a Christian nation, and stop glorifying American military campaigns. Now, this is a conservative church. He's no liberal. He's opposed to abortion, thinks homosexuality is not God's ideal, it's against pornography and all of that. And most of the people in his church were politically and theologically conservative. But here's what he preached. He said, when the church wins the culture wars, it inevitably loses. When it conquers the world, it becomes the world. When you put your trust in the sword, you lose the cross. And I know some people that are listening, both Sigrid and Kim, who have asked me to announce this, and I should have done this earlier. In some ways, there's too much here. But you go to my website, look for ways to get involved in the peace and social justice movement. But there is a demonstration calling for a ceasefire now. It's a silent march for peace with justice in the Middle East. And that's going to be at noon, Tuesday, August 8th, at the federal building, the McNamara building, downtown Detroit. And then there's a David Lippman. And see, this is too long, really, to give you. But go to my site, Peter Werbe, P-E-T-E-R-W-E-R-B-E, W-E-R-B-E.com. Go to the calendar. All of these events are on there. I think a number of them are worthy. A number of them I'm going to show up at. All right, let's go to Greg. Greg is listening in Saline, Michigan. Hi, Greg.
How you doing, Peter?
Doing good. Thanks for calling.
Good. Hey, I just wanted to share a little information. I really like your show. I agree with a lot of your viewpoints. Read the article about the percentage of Americans that think the government had a hand in 9/11. There's a video called Loose Change. If you search it on Google.
I've seen it.
Search 9/11 on Google.
Yeah.
A video called Loose Change will come up. It's about an hour and 20 minutes. Watch it if you get a chance.
Well, wait a minute here. For one thing, your voice is getting weirder and weirder here. Where are you moving on a cell phone?
Yeah.
All right, hang on. Loose Change, it makes some extraordinarily interesting points, but its essential thesis is totally cuckamamie. Come on, Greg. It's saying that the two of the planes that were that one that crashed in Pennsylvania and the other one that that hit the Pentagon, that those landed in Cleveland and somehow the passengers were all taken somewhere.
Right.
That's nuts. That's absolutely nuts.
Well, I don't agree with 100% of it, but there are points and aspects of it that are hard to dispute. The evidence that's showing.
I agree that some of it is, and increasingly we find out that the 9/11 Commission was told a number of different stories by the Pentagon to the point where they were considering impaneling a grand jury to investigate whether they had lied to the commission. And there's more there that needs to be
absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. And but that thesis doesn't hold a bit of water. All right, thank you very much. Time now. Let's get Richard from East Point. Richard, hi. I got about 1 minute for you, unfortunately. Go ahead.
Okay. First of all, I just have a question. This is kind of this doesn't really tie into anything, but who was the president who said we have nothing to fear but fear itself?
Roosevelt.
Roosevelt. Okay. Well, I'm a strong believer in the sentence that George Bush's motto is that he has nothing to sell but fear itself.
I like it. I told a guy earlier I was going to steal the line. I'm going to steal that one too.
Go ahead, man. You have my permission.
All right.
And also,
yeah.
What is your take on the whole Iraqi war in just a nutshell?
Wow. Unnecessary, illegal, and mismanaged, and a waste of lives and fortune.
Yes, but I have to disagree with you on one aspect, that when the UN went to that baby food factory,
yeah,
and they were like, let us in, and they said no, and then they went back 2 days later and they found traces of anthrax.
You know, I don't remember that, but George Bush sent over this whole team, spent $20 million, and they came up with absolutely nothing. Got to go, Richard. Thank you very much. Appreciate you being our last caller. Thanks for hanging around tonight and for participating, either listening or calling in. We'll do it again next week. Stay tuned. Harvey Wasserman, one of the founders of Greenpeace, one of the what the hell did he put together? Well, I talk about in the first part of a rock concert that he put together. All right. He'll tell us about it. That's coming up next on Night Call.
This is WRIF.com.
101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. As we record this interview, the heat indexed over 100. It's probably all going to be forgotten in a few days, going to drop down to 75 or 80. But this portends something. And when I think about global warming issues, when I think about energy issues, I think about Harvey Wasserman, an old friend, an activist, an author, and someone who we can depend on to give us good information. Harvey Wasserman in Columbus, Ohio. Welcome back to the Peter Werby Show.
Peter, it's great to talk to you again.
I just want to give people, just because you're my old pal, they need a little more of this. I'm going to read just a couple lines from your biography here. Harvey Wasserman is a world-renowned expert on utility deregulation, atomic power, and renewable alternatives. And I like this. Since 1973, Harvey coined the phrase, no nukes. You did? I didn't know that.
I did indeed. Well, it's proof if you put a monkey in a room long enough with a typewriter, something good will come out. So.
And he's led the charge against nuclear power for such groups as Greenpeace. I think that's where I met you. And Musicians United for Safe Energy. Was that big concert with Jackson Browne and everything?
Yeah, there were five concerts in Madison Square Garden in 1979, September. It was a giant sweep decoration project. And we had Jackson Browne, Bonnie Raitt, Graham Nash, CSN, James Taylor, Carly Simon, and, of course, Bruce Springsteen did two nights for us. So it was really great.
Sure, and you were there, all of them, huh?
Oh, yeah, believe me. I stood about 20 feet from Bruce Springsteen for two consecutive nights while he played for about 3 hours a night. It was fabulous. I think it was his 30th birthday, actually.
That's a while ago now, isn't it?
It was.
Also, Harvey is the senior editor of freepress.org, another highly recommended site, freepress.org. And he's got 8 books out, including a how-to guide for farmers and investors building their own wind farms, which I'd like to talk about. The Last Energy War, published by Seven Stories Press, which we interviewed Harvey about, which is an analysis of the disaster of electric utility deregulation in California. Other books are George W. Bush versus the Superpower of Peace, that's We the People. And the latest book, brand new, at least a new edition, Solartopia, Our Green-Powered Earth AD 2030, and that's right, just new out again, a new version?
Yeah, so what's happening is I've jumped into the world of self-publishing, which I love, and I published a small edition of Solartopia, and then all these solar experts, which I wanted to do, they critiqued it, and I changed things, and so now Solartopia is out there. It's available at my website, harveywasserman.com, and I'm taking suggestions, and I'm going to do one more version, which will be published on Earth Day in 2007, and it's the first envisioning of what the world could look like and had better look like, actually, after a solar revolution, a revolution in solar energy.
Yeah, and HarveyWasserman.com, last name is spelled WASSERMAN.
One N.
.com. And I'll have a link on my site, PeterWerby.com. WERBE. We were talking before. It doesn't mean just water man?
Yeah.
It does.
Waterman, actually, the main Wasserman in German is Aquarian. If you look at the astrological charts, when they get to whatever they call Aquarius, it's Wasserman. So there you go.
And mine,
we're in the age of Wasserman.
Yeah, that's right. Mine is Werbe, W-E-R-B-E, which means advertising in German. Radio advertising is Werbefunken. Why are we taking up, I'm doing this, taking up this important time with
right.
this nonsense? Let's get down to it. Here, an article in the New York Times today, electrical use hits new highs in much of U.S. We've got this almost global heat wave, and experts say demand is rising faster than the ability to meet it, which could, over the long run, pose the risk of both local and regional failures. Well, and there's still some people that say there's not global warming, right?
Yeah, three or four. Well, actually, I had a very revealing moment. I was stuck in an airport and went to the bookstore and, dare I say, I picked up a book by Ann Coulter. And I'm reading there, and she's got this ridiculous denunciation of global warming, completely misinformed, ill-informed, mean-spirited, who would have guessed. And then the next chapter is a denunciation of Darwin's theory of evolution. I thought, well, there must be a pattern here. But no serious climate scientists doubt anymore, as far as I'm concerned, the theory of global warming. You can find a few. I bet half of them are fundamentalist Christians who have this, you know, anti-Darwinian thing, and the other half work for coal companies. But, you know, there's absolutely no doubt that the level of CO2 in the atmosphere has risen in recent years and is a record highs, at least that we know of. And simultaneously, of course, the weather has gone nuts.
If there's no question, in my mind, there isn't, from all the scientific evidence I've seen and the preponderance of climatologists and environmental scientists and what have you, that we are facing global warming, why then is there still this presentation in the media of he said, she said? So there's this one guy, Michael, what the hell is his name, at the University of Virginia, just saw in the New York Times he'd just gotten $150,000 to continue his research from utility companies, and he is quoted, I mean, they'll quote Harvey Wasserman, you, and then they'll say, well, we better get the opposing point of view.
Right. You know, it's like opposing points of view on the Holocaust. I mean, you know, it's just, it's beyond any scientific doubt that we've completely messed up the weather patterns. And one of the reasons some people have a hard time with it is because it's not just global warming. Global warming is really a misnomer. It's climate chaos. You know, we've induced record droughts, record floods, record rainfall, record cold spells, record hot spells. It's just we've created total chaos with our meteorological systems, and thus with our life support systems, and it's a nightmare, and we're in very serious trouble.
Well, one thing I said at the introduction is the heat index is over 100 for the second day in a row here in the Detroit area,
right.
And when tomorrow it'll be 75 to 80, and everyone will probably forget it. But I do remember, and here's one of the arguments that the few people left that say this is just a hot summer. 1988 in Detroit was miserable. A few days over 100, 90s all the time. So they say, hey, you know, 18 years ago, it was a lot hotter. You know,
You know, I don't know if you've seen the Al Gore movie and Convenient Truth, but almost every successive year now since the 1980s has been the hottest on record, including last year. And, you know, the cumulative temperature of the Earth. And it just absolutely adds up and gets worse and worse. And, you know, the irony is the theory of global warming does not even have to be true for us to want to do what it will take to solve the problem.
That's very interesting. Go ahead. Yeah.
Because renewable energy is so cheap now and so readily available and so environmentally clean and such a great job creator that we should be going solar anyway, even if global warming wasn't even a problem. Because this is the best stuff. I mean, and, you know, we are definitely running out of natural gas. There's, you know, thousands of natural gas generators that were built that will never be used because gas has gotten too expensive. There are, you know, oil, we all know what oil is about. We're in a war for one right now. Coal is plentiful to a certain extent, but the cheapest coal is running out, and miners get killed and there's acid rain and all this other stuff. And nuclear power, forget it. Nuclear power is never going to work. It's too expensive, too complicated, too dangerous. So, you know, on the other hand, wind power is booming. It's extremely well proven. It's ridiculously cheap, tremendously profitable for those who invest in it, limitless possibilities, and tremendous job creator. So we have wind power, then we have solar. You know, you have the wonderful Ovonix factories in the Troy area. Photovoltaic cells translate sunlight directly to electricity. You have solar water heating. It's a booming industry, and it's cheap.
Harvey Wasserman, you know I overall agree with you, but let me play the devil's advocate, which some of my listeners think I am in any event. Essentially, you're still talking about a footnote of the economy. When we look at the swollen profits of BP and ExxonMobil and the rest of them, Shell, that have just come in with 40% above last quarter, we're talking about hundreds of billions of dollars of profits.
Right out of our pocket.
Well, yeah, that's our money, unless it's, let me not go too far afield. So the point being is that when you have those gigantic economic forces of oil and other fossil fuel industries that have a willing and compliant representative sitting at the highest political office, it becomes a little difficult to think about that we're going to move into something nice and clean.
Well, except that this stuff is incredibly profitable. The biggest maker of photovoltaic cells in the world is British Petroleum.
Really?
And they are not, I will not say that they are sitting on it and trying to kill it at this point. That may have happened a decade or two ago, but the handwriting's on the wall. This stuff is the future. There is not an infinite supply of oil. There is certainly not of gas. Coal, like I say, is problematic, and nuclear power, forget it. Where else are they going to go? I mean, as far as I'm concerned, renewables is no longer the alternative fuel. It's coal, oil, nukes, and gas, which I call in Solartopia King Kong, although King Kong in the movies was a lot more sympathetic character. So, you know, these are the fuels of the past. Sun, wind, biofuels. Biofuels are a very big deal. You know, right now we're getting ethanol from corn and diesel from soy, but that's not going to last. You do not use perennial food crops for fuel. And there's some critiques about how ethanol made with corn is not really a net energy producer. And there is some credibility to that. I mean, there are some legitimate questions about ethanol, corn-based ethanol.
Being a net,
right?
Because all the things you got to do to grow it.
Right.
Yeah.
And soy diesel, actually, we don't see those critiques. It seems pretty well established. But, you know, in the long term, ethanol is going to be made with switchgrass, with poplar trees, with Jerusalem artichoke, and that four-letter word, hemp. I mean, it's going to be easy to grow perennials that you don't eat. Same with diesel. Diesel is now being made with soybeans. It still actually seems to be fairly profitable and, you know, a net energy producer, but in the long term, diesel is going to be made with vegetable oils. The diesel engine was originally designed to run on vegetable oils. And, you know, so there's really no question that the future is with renewables. Now, in Solartopia, I posit a world by 2030 that is 100% renewables. And there are those who say that's completely unrealistic and blah, blah, blah. But, in fact, the National Renewable Energy Lab, NREL.US, for those of you who are interested in their website, has issued a draft study, which they then recalled, saying that 100% of America's electricity could be supplied with renewables by 2020. Huh. That's actually 10 years ahead of my projections in Solartopia of 2030. Now, they said, oh, well, we overstated and blah, blah, blah. We're looking at it again. But the fact is that we do have the technology. We do not need another Manhattan Project for renewables. This stuff has all been invented. It's out there. It's profitable. What we need is the subsidies on coal, oil, nukes, and gas to be taken away. I mean, I'm actually a free market Milton Friedman guy when it comes to energy because the renewables are cheaper and the coal, oil, nukes, and gas are being propped up by government subsidies.
Well, Harvey Wasserman, you really answered my question. I've heard it said that renewables and solar power and wind power does not have the capacity to supply the world's energy needs.
It's utterly false.
Okay.
It's utterly false. There's sufficient wind potential in Kansas, North Dakota, and West Texas alone to supply 100% of the nation's electricity with available windmills. You don't have to invent new wind turbines to do this, because the ones we got are so big and so cost-effective that it could be done.
Gee, where would we get the money? Maybe, how about the military budget?
Well, you know,
we wouldn't have to fight any more wars.
Well, let me tell you a little story. Columbus, Ohio has no mass transit. You know, we have buses. There's no light rail here. This city is choking on traffic. So the Central Ohio Transit Authority put out a study for a rail-based mass transit system, and they came back and said, well, it costs about $500 million. And the federal government says, no, it's too expensive. However, the federal government is now spending $8 billion a month in Iraq. So for 1/16 of what we're spending in Iraq in 1 month, we could have had a light rail system in the city. And the city will not survive without a light rail system. Buses are not going to do it. And what's killing American cities and will kill us in the future is a lack of mass transit. And yet, we can't do it because of our war for oil in Iraq.
Mm-hmm. Besides your book, Solartopia, our green-powered Earth AD 2030, you've also written a how-to guide for farmers and investors building their own wind farms. And I just saw in the New York Times today that Vail Resorts, the big Colorado ski and recreation company, says it's going to make a huge investment in wind power. And yet you find increasingly objections, not only from local homeowners on places like the East Coast and resort areas, but also from some environmentalists who say those big windmills chew up birds.
Yeah, you know, this bird thing is nonsense. I mean, there is one wind farm in Altamont Pass, California, one of the early wind farms, and they set up these towers. They're lattice work towers. They're erector set towers, and the birds perch on them, and they see prey on the ground, and, they dive, and they get clunked by the blades. So you know what the solution is? You build towers that are tubular, where the birds can't perch, and then it doesn't happen anymore. I mean, there are some places where windmills could do harm to birds. We do have environmental impact statements that watch out for that. We've also been blindsided. There was a wind farm built in West Virginia that has been killing some bats. So this is the problem. However, a billion birds a year are killed by cats, and hundreds of thousands by cars, hundreds of thousands by guy wires on towers, and hundreds of thousands on buildings with glass windows. The bird kill at wind farms is virtually insignificant. My buddy Dan Jewell in Minnesota owns 17 big windmills. He's had them up for 7 years. He's never had a single bird kill. I visited the windmill at Hull, Massachusetts, which is on the water in a schoolyard just south of Boston. The thing is surrounded, swarmed over by seagulls, never a dead one. You know, I mean, these days, these machines are so big and so slow that it takes a really suicidal bird to get clunked by a windmill.
Wait, anyway, go back with the cat figure, though. Did you say billion?
Yeah, as many as a billion. It's a huge number.
It can't
domestic
be.
Cats, feral cats.
It can't be.
You know,
be
people
that
really
big.
Want to be worried about birds. They should declaw their cats.
I know, but Harvey, it couldn't be a billion birds by
how
cat.
Many cats do you think are out there?
I don't know. Not a billion.
Well, it doesn't take a billion birds.
Say they each kill four. There has to be 200.
You got it. Yeah, right. they have a quota enforced with ration stamps for cats.
Well, this is going back to the old stuff, but I remember I did want to get your opinion on this. Today, or I guess it was yesterday, the Senate voted to open up 8.3 million acres of federal waters to Central Gulf of Mexico oil and gas drilling. What's your sense of that?
Completely unnecessary. It shouldn't happen. It really should not happen. I mean, we need to keep our waters clean, and we don't need to be drilling offshore. The fossil fuels are done. We don't have the Earth no longer has the carrying capacity for us to be burning fossil fuels. It's just got to stop.
You know, and take this in the right spirit. I'm still fearful. I'm still fearful of the elites that control things, whose visions, well, they were in the 20th century. They're actually going back to the 19th century now. But there is a spirit that you have that's very attractive. But what we, and I'm not telling you anything you don't know, is the social and political forces behind what's possible. I mean, these people could run us right into the ground environmentally or militarily before we could get those towers up.
Well, they're doing it, but actually, there's a couple things working. First of all, they're out of gas. Natural gas is just, you know, really going. In fact, the major source of new natural gas is going to be dump sites. You know, 6,000 or 7,000 urban dumps around the country that are going to be our next big source of methane. But you know, oil has all its problems, as we know, and the cheap oil is gone. I mean, you know, they want to drill here, they want to drill there. It's not cheap. And, you know, coal has tremendous problems, as we know. Nuclear power doesn't work. It'll never work. It certainly can't. Nuclear power cannot compete with renewable energy anymore. You can't, you know, a windmill is cheaper than a nuclear plant at this point, and there's more capacity. More wind power is being built on the planet today than nuclear is being built. So these guys have no economic room to maneuver anymore. There's no, in terms of the markets, you know, I'll take a free market in energy any day. I've become a Milton Friedman guy. I mean, you know, remove the subsidies from coal and oil and nukes and gas and go head-to-head with wind and solar and biofuels, and wind, solar, and biofuels win. You know, wind power is now down, even in Michigan, places in Michigan, it's down 5 cents a kilowatt hour. You can't beat that.
Sure.
And you know, you have Ovonix, you have all these solar cells being built, you have solar water heating. This is the next big dot-com, except it's not going to crash, because, well, unless people are completely nutso again. But, you know, there's a limitless future, virtually limitless future for renewable energy.
Well, Harvey Wasserman, just in the couple of minutes we have remaining, let's talk about some of the solutions that you suggest. And some of them, you're talking about market-driven, which is not usually my big advocation, but you talk about increasing fuel efficiency standards. With the price of gas, it's really happening. Ford, particularly, its SUVs and truck sales are dropping precipitously.
Yeah, and you know, Toyota, I think, just surpassed General Motors.
No, it just surpassed Ford.
As a Ford. Oh.
Yeah, yeah. And, well, I remember one years ago I heard Rush Limbaugh saying, don't listen to these liberals. What they want to do is take your SUVs away from you.
Well, America's greatest oxymoron. I mean, you know, this has happened twice now. In the 1970s, remember, after the oil embargo, they said the same thing. And Ford and GM, and remember Chrysler, did nothing. And Honda and Toyota came in and, you know, stole their business. Now, once again, you know, we're talking about hybrids. And Ford and General Motors, no Chrysler at this point, you know, said, hey, forget it. And once again, they're getting clobbered. I mean, are we brain dead in this country? Don't answer that. I mean, you know, so the point is that renewables are not rocket science. There's no need for a Manhattan Project. This stuff has been invented. When I sat down to construct a solartopia, a world driven on green energy, to be 25 years out, I didn't have to invent anything.
Mm-hmm.
All the technology that we need to get to a green-powered Earth 100% is invented. Now, there's going to be some improvements, you know, in biofuels. Wind power, there will be some improvements, but God, we're under 5 cents a kilowatt hour already. You know, there's not much deeper you can go. Biofuels are going to be improved, but, you know, we know what biofuels are about. Brazil is almost entirely out of petroleum economy at all. They're just using bagasse from sugarcane and other biofuels. I mean, Brazil's a big country. So this stuff is here. It's with us. And photovoltaic cells, where the United States had the lead worldwide, you know, it's all Sanyo, Sharp, Kyocera, But thankfully, Ovonics is in the picture too. So Solartopia, you know, it's not far. Not only is it not far-fetched, you get there with stuff that's already been invented,
mm-hmm.
And the jobs that could be created, and the economic benefits are just, you know, we should be doing this anyway, even if global warming wasn't a problem.
Well, one of your other solutions, actually, that wouldn't even be necessary if we made that switch, which is curbing carbon dioxide emissions, right?
Right.
Yeah. But even in the short run, as you know from your environmental activism, that the Great Lakes is supervised by a body called the International Joint Commission.
Right.
And long time ago, they said zero emissions into the Great Lakes, both air and water, and since they don't have any enforcement power, that's never happened. I mean, in the short run, we ought to be doing that at a minimum.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, there's the Great Lakes themselves are a huge energy resource. If you look at the wind maps of the Great Lakes, so anybody's interested, go to nrel.us, nrel.us, and look at their wind maps. In Lake Erie and in the other lakes is red, which indicates class 7, which is the highest wind speed. And, you know, the lakes are shallow, they're fresh water. I mean, there's all this argument over wind farms going into the oceans. The oceans are the last place they should go. They should go in the lakes first because the lakes are fresh water. The ocean, you have a four-letter word problem there, which is salt. And, salt destroys a lot of machinery, whereas in the lakes you have fresh water, they're shallow, the good sites are close to cities. You know, Toronto's got $90 million invested already in offshore windmills that they're about to, they're being built. So city of Buffalo, every city in the lakes will have windmills right in the downtown area.
Well, you coined the phrase no nukes way back when. No oil, that's not very catchy, but that's what we ought to be looking at. Harvey Wasserman, thanks so much for being with me.
Well, thank you, and I hope to see you in Solartopia.
Yes, and Solartopia, the name of Harvey Wasserman's book, Our Green-Powered Earth, AD 2030, is the subtitle. You can go to harveywasserman.com. It'll also be on my website, peterwerby.com. I forgot. I'm just going to read this. Harvey Wasserman is the father of five daughters, but donates the zero population growth as penance. Harvey.
Right, I do it on a per capita basis.
Thanks for joining me.
Peter, you're the greatest. Thank you.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with another guest right after this.
And now, a word from the Riff Legal Eagles. Unless otherwise stated, all entrants for WRIF contests must be at least 18 years of age and a legal resident of the United States. A household is eligible to win one contest per 30 days, every 6 months, for prizes valued at $600 or higher. Radio Media Detroit and its affiliates, promotional sponsors, advertising and promotional agencies, and other radio and television stations in the Detroit ADI are not eligible to participate. One entry per person. No purchase or other consideration is necessary to participate in a contest. Void where prohibited. Prizes are not transferable or redeemable for cash. 101 WRIF reserves the right to substitute any prize for one of equal or greater value. By participating in the contest, contestants consent to the broadcast and or publication of their name, voice, face, and or likeness without compensation. Participants listening online at www.wrif.com may receive audio that is delayed by as much as 60 seconds later than the over-the-air transmission, which could potentially affect chances of winning. General contest rules are available online at www.wrif.com or during regular business hours at the WRIF Studios, 1 Radio Plaza, Detroit, Michigan, 48220.
You're listening to WRIF.com.
Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Boy, the world of business. How do you ever figure it out? How do you know all the details? You may remember last week where we had Doug Henwood on, the author of Wall Street, and he gave us kind of a peek at how everything goes. But let's get a little deeper, or I don't know. We'll decide whether it's deeper or not, because there is a tongue-in-cheek here. The book is called A Devil's Dictionary of Business. It'll take me quite a while to read the subtitle, so I may wait on that. The author is Nicholas von Hoffman, and the back simply says, Nicholas von Hoffman has had a long and bumpy career in journalism during which he has been fired more than a few times by editors and TV executives who have a limited tolerance for curmudgeonly behavior. More so that he is the author of 8 books. He is famous as a columnist for the Washington Post and later well-known to TV audiences as a counterpoint commentator for CBS's 60 Minutes. He was fired abruptly by Don Hewitt in 1974. We're reaching him in Maine. Nicholas von Hoffman, welcome to the Peter Werby Show.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, and are you still with the New York Observer? Did you?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And is that the one that just got sold?
It just got sold.
Yeah, to like...
So who knows? I may not be with them much longer.
And you also write for The Nation and many other... places as well. Tell us just quickly about being fired by Don Hewitt. What was the crime?
The crime was, this is a long time ago, it was during the Watergate business, and it was toward the end of President Nixon's tenure in the White House, and this the fight over him and what have you had gone on and on and on, and so I did this little shtick in which I said, I really don't know why everybody is fighting about whether he should stay or he shouldn't stay, that he is like a dead mouse on the kitchen floor with the family all gathered around arguing about who is going to pick him up by the tail and drop him in the trash.
That's great. He should have made you, Hewitt, the famous, what's his title, producer?
Forget what his...
Yeah, I mean, a big shot at CBS.
It lit up the switchboard, let me tell you, at BlackRock, and I think Bill Paley, who was then the head of CBS and the principal stockholder, I think he may have called down. At any rate... The next day, Hewitt calls and he says, Nick, you have sent broadcast journalism back 20 years. And I said to him, I'd be proud if it was so.
Well, this is great. Nicholas von Hoffman's book, A Devil's Dictionary of Business. Here you go with the subtitle. Sit back. It's going to take a while. Money, the Making, Losing, and Printing Thereof, Commerce, Trade, Clever Tricks, Tour de Force, Globalism and Globaloney, Industry, Invention, the Stock Market, Marvelous Explanations and Clarifications, all presented with wit and attitude. Nicholas von Hoffman, tell us about the Devil's Dictionary from which this takes its name.
Well, of course, there is originally the Devil's Dictionary by... what's wrong with me?
Me too.
I'm blanking.
You go. I'll think about it.
Yeah, all right. But at any rate, it's right on the tip of my tongue.
That's my job. Go ahead.
Okay. But at any rate, so the title is obviously borrowed from that, except instead of saying the, I say a, because I'm definitely a minor devil. And so I can't claim to have the Devil's Dictionary.
Yeah, but in the introduction, you say it's better to go to the devil for an explanation than an angel. How come?
Well, because they know a lot more. I mean, wickedness has knowledge. Remember, the people got booted out of the Garden of Eden because they supped, they ate the apple of knowledge, which the old devil, of course, had fed them. But, angels are too pure to know what's going on. They do not know what's cooking.
How did you?
You got to find a devil.
All right. So we have a Devil's Dictionary of Business. Wait a minute here. If I press one little button, it should I was trying to kind of Google it as we talked, who wrote it. But remind me, though, of what the purpose of the original...
Well, it was originally... Oh, this is going to drive both of us nuts. It was originally a...
Ambrose Bierce.
Thank you, Ambrose Bierce. Well, he was a very saturnine man with a, shall we say, a pessimistic view of his fellow creatures. And it comes out in this very amusing but dark dictionary, which is, of course, not really a dictionary, but a compilation of his funniest and darkest observations. He's kind of, you might say, he's Mark Twain without any love.
I like that. Well, so the modern one that you've written, A Devil's Dictionary of Business, I suspect that Ambrose Bierce probably wrote the original Devil's Dictionary in the 19th century off the top of his head. They were witty and pithy and bitter, as you said, observations of human foibles and of politicians and what have you. But a lot of what's in your A Devil's Dictionary of Business... must have taken some work to get all this in one place. I mean, there's a lot here.
I occasionally let my guard down and actually provide information, but I try to do it in a in an entertaining form, and I try also to, you know, business is this huge, huge thing, and it is so difficult to get one's arm around it. So this is kind of a sugar-coated way that somebody can, you know, leaf through it. This is not a book to be read from the first page to the last, but to be picked up and dipped into. And, you know, so that you, you're supposed to be amused, and it is supposed to also give you kind of a little insight you may not have had.
Ambrose Bierce, well, in fact, here's one up on the screen now. Is bait, under B, a preparation that renders the hook more palatable. The best kind is beauty.
Yes.
So they were these kind of, as we, that's
right.
Pithy, I would say,
yes.
Right?
And definitely pithy.
And neither of us lisp either. So it's,
no.
But there are ones that are, the second category without the lisp, or with the lisp, or wait a minute, without it, I guess. And did you read Bierce? Did you really?
I did, you know, many years ago, but this is so different. It really is, because it is informational. I mean, you will bump into a lot of people who made your world one way or another, you know, and that in this book you will run. And, of course, there are also actually really terms of business that people may or may not be familiar with, or may not be as familiar with as they ought to be. I mean, I'm just going through this thing, saying things like channeled stuffing, which you probably don't know what it means.
No idea.
You might want to know.
I do. Tell us before.
Pushing products out to wholesalers and into the distribution stream, then entering them on the books as though they'd already been sold when they're not.
Huh. Which then shows that this is to inflate stock price.
That's right.
Wow.
To make your business look better than it is, and then, of course, you have to swallow them later. But you may also do it because it helps you with your stock options and things like that. So then there are, there are all kinds of... where did the conglomerate come from? What is a console? And then there's a lot of stuff that is, at least I think, mildly amusing. Here's one called cash, money, moolah, do re mi, lettuce, spandulix, coin, dough, bread, skins, groat, long green, shekel, smackaroo, pelf, buck, cowrie shell, the root of all evil, viaticum, species, big ones, farthing, scratch, fish, cabbage, talent, lucre, assignat, boodle, ducat, simoleon, currency, dinero, what makes the world go round, gelt, jack, smacker, store of value, medium of exchange, wampum. If the number of words for the same object is indicative of its importance to a society, draw your own conclusions.
That's interesting, and I will be delving here into the scatological once again. I usually don't do it at all. Here's twice in a program. The slang for male and female genitals, if using your equation there, that you can, the number of words for an object,
exactly,
is enormous. It's like 20 or 30 times.
Yeah, it tells you something.
It does. The book is The Devil's Dictionary of Business. Nicholas von Hoffman is my guest on the Peter Werbe Show. Now, I asked you before the broadcast whether or not you had a website, and you guys said, no, life's too short. You can go to nationbooks.org and read more about this, or it's available in your local, hopefully independent bookstore. Check there first, please. But when you did research for this, I mean, I was looking, where was it, Peter Drucker.
Yes.
Did you just go online and say Peter, or,
well,
I mean, how'd you even know that?
You've got to be careful about going online, because while you can get a lot of information, if you're actually going to put it in a book, you better check it somewhere else.
Exactly.
So one did a lot of, yes, I did do a lot of that. And you will find all kinds of people that you never thought of run across in the book. One of the things that I like to do in this book is put in the names of some people who really helped make America as we live it every day that you may never have heard of. I'll just give you one here. Samuel Eberly Gross. If not the inventor of the housing development industry, Gross was certainly a founder. And he lived from 1843 to 1913, and it tells how he literally put together what we now take for granted is the housing developments had never been done before. And he also was a guy who developed a system of financing that made it possible for working people to buy their own homes.
Now, how did you know he even existed?
It wasn't easy.
Okay. And Peter B. Drucker, is it B?
I can't remember what his middle name
is.
Yeah,
something like that.
No, they're, you know, these things are not, some of them are pretty obscure, but also very important people in the history of the building of our country. And remember, finally, why is business very important? Well, aside from the fact that it's how we make a living, these social organizations provide us only with our food, our shelter, and our clothing, and everything else. So it's worth knowing about them.
Well, it is, and that's both, or is, I was maybe posed as a question, is that comforting or frightening? It's actually a little more of the latter. I just finished E.M. Forster's short story called The Machine Stops. Have you ever read that?
No, I haven't.
But it is about this machine that takes care of everyone's need, and it was written in 1909. It was incredibly prescient in terms of realizing what kind of technological advances were even possible at the time, and then poof, stop. So right now we're in this enormous international grid that we depend on, as you said, for everything. That could be scary.
Well, it is scary, and of course, I think the other thing that I think that we ought to, you know, pay attention to is that in this era where we talk so much about family values, probably more than any other single set of institutions that have shaped what our family life is like today is business. I mean, if it were not for business, women would not be in the workplace today. They would be back on the farm, hauling water, washing clothes by hand, etc., etc., just as one example. Business is responsible for changing the way we eat, changing the rituals of family life, the end of the family life where the families eat together, everywhere you turn, and if you look at daily life of the family, much of what we do and what we no longer do is because of business.
Now, is this an endorsement or just descriptive?
Well, I'm, you know, this book doesn't do that kind of really any, that kind of editorializing. I mean, I think we could talk a long time about the pros and cons of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you, you, I mean, and there are a lot of pros. It's not, it's all tangled. I mean, you really don't want to go back to life as it was led in America, just say in the 1870s or something like that. No indoor plumbing,
mm-hmm.
no running water. Well, you know, Andrew Carnegie comes along and leads in the building of a series of business institutions that makes cast iron cheap enough so that we begin to get water pipes, things of that sort. This changes family life, and for the better. And then you look at some other things and you say, well, I don't know. But it's not one of those things where you can say it's all one way or it's all another.
Yeah, well, it is difficult because the thing, of course, that we put so much stock, or not, I wouldn't say stock, so much importance on is health, although that too is a double-edged sword. So much about modern petrochemical industrial nuclear society is sickening to us and the whole world's population, and yet we have a medical apparatus that can that has extended our life considerably. Me, I could go back to the late 1930s. Think about it: cool cars, central heating, central plumbing, electric guitars, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, no, but you wouldn't have lived this long.
Yeah, I don't know. Is it all? Never mind. That's going to get us too philosophical. Nicholas von Hoffman is my guest on the Peter Werbe Show. His book is a Devil's Dictionary of Business. One of his best-selling books was Citizen Cohn, about Roy Cohn, that was made into an HBO special as well. You know, I totally missed that on in both of its forms. I was thinking of Tony Kushner's what was it? Angels in America.
Angels Over America. Yes.
Yeah. But which did either which preceded which, and what did it end?
Mine preceded his. But they're different. I think mine. I don't. I'm going to sound like I'm boasting, but I think it was a kind of. It was an element that he used in doing his. They're really not comparable at all.
Mm-hmm.
His is much better.
If we're, I should. Well, you went from self promotion to modesty there.
Yeah, I shouldn't do that.
That's okay. No, this is showbiz.
It's
self promotion. No, self promotion is very important.
We've even got presidents in this book.
Well, let me just tell people, Roy Cohn, C-O-H-N, was an aide to Senator Joseph McCarthy and then died of AIDS and is featured in Tony Kushner's incredible play, Angels Over America. So, but presidents are in the book, Devil's Dictionary of Business.
Yeah, I'll give you Truman, Harry S., 1884-1972, unsuccessful small businessman. Having failed in the private sector, farming and retail men's clothing, he switched over onto the public tit, where, by most accounts, he did better.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we haven't had many businessmen presidents. The most successful was Herbert Hoover as a businessman.
Really?
He may have left something to be desired in other respects.
Yeah. Well, same with George W. Oh, no, he actually hasn't done well in either regard.
No,
he?
But Hoover was a brilliant businessman,
yeah.
A true pioneer, a remarkable businessman.
Here is a little trivia question for you. What did the S in Harry S. Truman stand for?
I don't think it stood for anything.
You are absolutely... Where is it? I should have brought a bell along.
Yes.
In fact, in some biographies, there is not a period or a dot, or what do you call it, a period after, because if they say like Peter A. Werbe, it would be A. period Werbe, because it stands for something. But Harry S. Truman... That's right. Okay. You know, one of the things that you mentioned, I'm looking at the clock, you were saying, what was contemporary problems? Or you were saying?
I've just been working on this thing called current events FAQs, as we say in the world of the computer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is pretty controversial. You may not want want this on your program. So
well, I don't know. I mean, Don Hewitt is gone, so he's not going to fire you like he did in...
Yeah, but you may fire me.
Okay.
All right, I'll read you a couple. Of
okay, but as long as, you know, we can...
The language is clean.
Okay, go
the
ahead.
Thoughts are controversial.
Go ahead, I can handle
question.
It.
Question. How bad was the bombing of Qana, that little Lebanon village they are making such a fuss over? Answer. The bombing of Qana, where some 50-plus people died, showed how much progress has been made. In 1966, the same place was bombed and over 100 people were killed. The next raid, scheduled for 2016, is expected to net only 25. In 2026, they will be down to 10 or 12, and by 2036, Qana should be a perfectly safe place to live.
Actually, Nicholas von Hoffman, I don't think that is beyond any pale at all. I think it's actually brilliant, and that is occurring. In fact, the last time that Israel invaded, of course, not over, Israel invaded Lebanon, the Israel Defense Force killed 20,000 civilians, and so far they're probably only 20 or 1/20th of that at this point. So things are improving.
Yeah, so here's another one.
Sure.
Question, what is a root cause? Answer, an underlying cause. Question, but what are they? Answer, a root or underlying cause is a condition or fact about which politicians can do nothing.
You know, you have another devil's dictionary here.
Question, are there any root causes to the fighting in Lebanon and Gaza? Answer, yes, many. Question, Tony Blair says there is an arc of extremism. What is that, and how does it differ from an axis of evil? Answer, the arc of extremism must not be confused with Blair Arch at Princeton University, a strong anti-terrorist institution. There are profound differences between an arc and an axis. An axis is like an axle, a bad thingy which connects to another bad thingy which connects to the thigh bone. An arc of extremism is a negative rainbow, a big, long, bad smear.
You know, I think they should have kept you on 60 Minutes. Hey, where's this?
I'll give you
one more. Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead. We got a couple
question.
More minutes.
What is a UN resolution? Answer, a UN resolution is a ukase or fatwa, which all Arabs and even all Muslims are supposed to obey. Question, are there UN resolutions for other people? Answer, no, not really. Resolutions for white people are more like suggestions of things they might want to think about doing. Question. But the UN made resolutions about Serbia and backed them up with bombs, didn't they? Answer. The Serbs were expelled from the white race some time ago. Question. Then what are they now? Answer. They are in the Russian category of people who look white but bathe infrequently.
This, my Serbian friends, is tongue-in-cheek. Hey, is this going to appear somewhere? Is this like you're writing for your...
No, it's going to appear somewhere. I'm figure out where. Do you want one or two more?
Sure.
Question. The Secretary of State Rice says that she is going to make a new Middle East. Has this been done before, or will it be another American first? Answer, sorry, it has been done before. Alexander the Great did it, and that's how we got Hellenism, which was not democratic, so it did not last. Many wars and plagues happened as a result.
You know, we are almost out of time, and one thing I noted, too, and I forgot to mention this, you wrote the libretto, the words for an
opera.
An opera.
Yes.
This is amazing. I if the world depended on me for productivity, we'd be in sad shape. I appreciate people like you very much. And one final thing, too. You also write for Architectural Digest?
Yes, I do.
You write architectural criticisms?
No, I don't, because I'm not competent to do that. But I write about architects and designers and things like that.
Huh. It's because I was thinking of what was his name? Was it Frederick Turner, the architectural critic for the for the New Yorker?
Yeah, I don't see the New Yorker that often, but yes,
he's long gone. Yeah, but he's did some amazing writing, as do you. And we're out of time. It's I was just having too much fun, and we'll continue because I thought I was bad just kind of thumbing through this book and picking out what I want. But you say that's the way it should be done with A Devil's Dictionary of Business. Nicholas von Hoffman has been my guest. The book is published by Nation Books. You can go to nationbooks.org. Thank you so much for being with me on the Peter Werbe Show.
Oh, well, thank you for having me. I enjoyed it. It was fun.
Thank you for listening to Night Call on 101 WRIF. The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WRIF Radio. Now, stay tuned for more Riff Rock on 101 WRIF Detroit.
And now, a word from the Riff Legal Eagles. Unless otherwise stated, all entrants for WRIF contests must be at least 18 years of age and a legal resident of the United States. A household is eligible to win one contest per 30 days every 6 months for prizes valued at $600 or higher. Greater Media Detroit and its affiliates, promotional sponsors, advertising and promotional agencies, and other radio and television stations in the Detroit ADI are not eligible to participate. One entry per person. No purchase or other consideration is necessary to participate in the contest. Void where prohibited. Prizes are not transferable or redeemable for cash. 101 WRIF reserves the right to substitute any prize for one of equal or greater value. By participating in the contest, contestants consent to the broadcast and or publication of their name, voice, face, and or likeness without compensation. Participants listening online at www.wrif.com may receive audio that is delayed by as much as 60 seconds later than the over-the-air transmission, which could potentially affect chances of winning. General contest rules are available online at www.wrif.com or during regular business hours at the WRIF Studios, 1 Radio Plaza, Detroit, Michigan, 48220.
You're listening to WRIF.com.
Jay Hudson.
Jay Hudson, I love you.
Hello, Jay Hudson.
You're listening to Jay Hudson.
Jay Hudson.
What's up, Motor City?
I need to hear that, man.
One bad-ass mother.
There is none higher.
Mr. Jay Hudson.
You're my boy!
Party with Jay Hudson. Oh, that sounds so sweet.
I'm calling the shots!
Oh,
this is a nightmare.
Yo!
You're rocking out with Jay Hudson.
Well, Lottie frickin' God!
WRIF Detroit. Everything that rocks.